read roll call.
Mayor Winfield?
Present.
Vice Mayor Barrett?
Here.
Councilmember Jones Ivey?
Here.
Councilmember Nicholson? Councilmember Pena?
Here.
Councilmember Rodman?
Here.
Councilmember Solomon?
Here.
Thank you. I'd like to thank everyone for taking time to join us this evening. This meeting is taking place online to comply with ongoing physical distancing requirements and ensure the community's ability to participate. The mechanics of tonight's meeting will be different than our regular in-person meetings. And in order to participate, you'll need to be logged into Zoom directly by computer or telephone. For those who are unfamiliar with Zoom software, I would like to provide a quick overview of how to participate this evening. Everyone's microphone, except for the individual that has the floor, will be muted throughout the meeting to ensure a smooth and efficient meeting as possible. Only select staff can turn on your microphone at the appropriate time if you'd like to ask a question or provide comments. I'll do my best to let everyone know when it's appropriate to raise your hand for a particular agenda item. If you wish to address the council on the budget, please raise your hand only when I announce it's appropriate to do so. There are two ways to do this. For those participating on any platform other than by phone, find and select the participants icon. This will open a dialog box that lists all participants in the meeting. Scroll down until you find your name and select your name. Once your name is selected, a second box will pop up where you'll have the option to raise your hand. For those participating via phone, you press *9 to raise your hand. Please wait to raise your hand until the appropriate agenda item has been announced. After I announce the opportunity to do so, our aim is to proceed in a timely and efficient manner. Once your hand is raised, staff will be alerted to your request to speak. This applies to the audience, staff, and members of the town council. So please raise your hand if you have a question or comment after I announce the appropriate time to do so. At the appropriate time, I will call on those with their hands raised to provide questions or comments. I will then announce your name and staff will unmute your access so you can speak. Please make sure you're not also muted on your personal device. As with all town council meetings, please clearly state your name and whether or not you are an Oro Valley resident. Also, speakers are limited to no more than 3 minutes. A timer will be used as with in-person meetings, and we ask that you please respect the 3-minute limit. Mr. Standish, if you would read the item 1 of our budget study session.
Presentation and discussion of the fiscal year 2020-21 town manager's recommended budget and preliminary 5-year financial forecast.
Thank you. Before the presentations are made this evening, our meeting tonight is scheduled from 6 to 9. I would like as much as possible to finish this evening as close to 9 o'clock as possible. As a reminder, we'll have tonight's study session, scheduled study session tomorrow evening, June 10th study session, and then if needed, a 4th study session July 1st. This evening we'll get through as many of the department presentations as possible, but I would like to conclude as close to 9 this evening, and then we'll continue to tomorrow, of course, unless we get through all the department presentations tonight. And so with that, I'd like to, and in terms of the order of business, you have the PowerPoint. It has order of presentations. So this evening, we'll have the budget snapshot review, the budget adoption process, the preliminary five-year forecast. We'll go to that point and then open it to the council for questions, comments to staff. Following that, we'll just simply follow the order of the departments, beginning with Public Works, and continue as it's outlined there on the PowerPoint. So with that, Ms. Jacobs.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of council. We're very pleased as a team to be here this evening to present to you more detail of the recommended budget for next fiscal year. As the mayor indicated, and we provided you previously with an order, we'll be going through the order, and we had to put this all together in a single slideshow for the Zoom process too. It just is easier that way. And then of course your team is here on the call, and we're happy to answer any questions. The department directors, many of them have staff available to answer any specific questions that you may have. So,
Ms. Jacobs, may I just, my apologies. I just want the council to note that there are page numbers on the PowerPoints. And so as staff goes through their presentation, you may want to make note of the particular page of the PowerPoint that you will have may want to reference in terms of a question, comment, clarification. So I'm just letting you know that you may want to make a note of that. And then that particular PowerPoint can be brought back up. All right.
Great. Thank you, Mayor. Since I went through the overview last week at the town council meeting, the only thing next that I just wanted to review with you before we move into the next sections is, again, just a summary for perhaps some members of the public who did not tune in last week, as a comparison of where we are with the budget and what that is. The total recommended budget is about $101 million. It's a 9.1% decrease from the current budget, and the general fund is almost 4% less than last year. We are planning to use excess reserves again this year, as we have most every year in the town. $2.3 million in planned use of those excess reserves, and $900,000 of that is for capital. And what is unique in this budget is that the balance of that $2.3 million in those excess reserves is being applied to the operating budget this year. Ordinarily, that those reserves are only spent on capital or PSPRS funding per your financial policy. If council adopts this budget, you can obviously override that policy, but that's what I'm recommending. And of course, we'll get into that more here in detail later. And I went into it a little bit in more detail last week. We will still have a very healthy ending fund balance of $14.8 million, or almost 36% of the general fund budget, which is well above your 25% town council reserve policy, and allows the town to continue to leave that $4.7 million available for contingency in the event that we don't have, or in the event that things transpire differently than what we projected. So that $4.7 million was rounded up to $5 million for contingency for next fiscal year. And if you just look very quickly at the bar chart, you can see that dark blue contingency bar is significantly larger than the contingency that we included in the current fiscal year budget. So this year, we have a new chief financial officer, and in speaking with Mr. Gephardt, he has brought some new and fresh ideas to our process. And one of them that he has found very successful doing is providing a reminder overview about the budget process. And he's put a few slides together And so with that, Mr. Mayor, I'd like to turn this over to our Chief Financial Officer, David Gephardt.
Well, thank you, Town Manager Jacobs. Good evening, Mayor and Council. I wanted to run through a basic budget refresher training for the public, the Budget and Finance Commission, and yourselves. I know if you're anything like me, I can tend to be a little forgetful sometimes. I tend to remember the things I should forget and forget the things I have to remember. And anyways, the budget can be an imposing document to digest, and it is generally only approved once a year. So I'm hoping that this training facilitates understanding and transparency. And I apologize on the front end if some of this seems rudimentary. I'm really just attempting to lay a foundation for the rest of the evening, as well as the rest of the budget process. Next. So oftentimes when one thinks about a budget, they think of revenues and expenditures. But in a governmental setting, we really need to think about resources and requirements. We'll talk about these, what these are a little bit later in the presentation. I think it goes without saying that a budget is an estimate. And no matter how hard you look, or I look into our crystal balls, next year is not going to play out exactly how we think it's going to play out. So there's got to be some flexibility to account for the unknown. And finally, budgets by definition are prioritization documents. We'll discuss this later, but the spending of broad categories or functions demonstrate where the priorities lie. It should always be the intent of staff to link the budget to the strategic plan and other policy documents of the town, because these documents have been vetted by council and they establish our priorities for the town moving forward. Next. So budgets establish the legal financial authority for governments to function, and they are utilized in the government arena to provide transparency and accountability to the taxpayer. And I think a lot of us have heard the term appropriations. Really what appropriations mean by definition is the legal authority to expend resources. So when you hear about that, you know, a federal bill or whatever, you know, this is an appropriations bill, that's really talking about the legal authority to expend resources. And that's similar to what that does at the federal level. It's also the same for us at the state and local government level. Next. So teamwork is absolutely essential for a successful budget process. Every department head, manager, council member, or even interested resident has a role to play in the process. And those roles are different. My next two bullet points are meant to illustrate two extremes as to how a governmental budget is put together. One extreme starts with all the requirements necessary to run the town and balances those requirements with tax revenues. This extreme really assumes an unlimited supply of tax revenues that offset the wish list of expenditures. And the other extreme starts with a limited amount of tax revenues and forces the government to reduce its requirements and expenditures to the limited revenues. These are both extremes. I would like to think of it in terms of opposite ends of the pendulum in terms of how the budget is constructed. The reality is that most governments are balanced between the two in developing their budgets. Most governments are balanced between the two in developing their budgets, and there's some give and take to get to an end product that the governing body can support. For the town, we are definitely leaning more towards the second extreme than the first, especially as it relates to what is proposed this evening. Lastly, I want to address briefly the concept of conservatism. Generally speaking, conservatism in a budget context means that you budget high on expenditures and low on revenues. It protects the government from risk that things don't materialize as expected, especially as it relates to revenues, but it can also apply to inflation or cost increases for expenditures. Next. This slide graphically depicts in broad terms how the budget is developed. Essentially, there's a lot of detail at the bottom that gets rolled into categories and functions and departments that get rolled up into the townwide budget summary. As the budget process proceeds, the intent should be for the governing body to continue elevating its view of the budget to a higher level, to more broad policy perspectives and views, and also strategic issues. Next. Many states have rules about governments exceeding their spending authority. Therefore, it's incumbent upon a government's governing body to establish what its legal level of budgetary control is. And that legal level of budgetary control determines whether violations have occurred. For the town, the legal level of budgetary control is at the fund level. The reason why I mention this is because this is actually what the town council approves. Is it inclusive of the underlying details? Absolutely. But the underlying details of the budget are not what the council adopts. And this is really typical of a council manager form of government in our state and also in other states that I've worked in. Next. All state and local governments are required to adopt a balanced budget. At a minimum, this is defined as resources equaling requirements. However, governments can choose to provide further definition by requiring that all revenues equal expenditures, or all ongoing revenues equal ongoing expenditures, so it can be defined different ways. Now, what is a surplus budget or what is a deficit budget? I would propose that a surplus budget is where ongoing revenues exceed ongoing expenditures. Likewise, I would define a deficit budget as being where ongoing revenues are less than ongoing expenditures. Another term for this is the budget being structurally balanced. In the budget proposed this evening, proposed ongoing revenues are less than ongoing expenditures by about 700,000. So it is not quite structurally balanced, but it's close. Next. This is just a graphical representation of the budget cycle. Obviously, where we're currently at is at the preliminary budget developed and presented stage, heading into public input. Next. As I mentioned earlier, you as an elected body have a very specific and crucial role in the budget process. Namely, the role is to provide direction and input and represent the community's interests. And just generally speaking, that role ought to be focused on larger issues, prioritization. If there are things that the budget doesn't quite address the way that you would like them to address, then that input is really crucial to us as staff to provide a document that meets what you're looking for. Next. As staff, we've heard some concerns over the conservatism of revenue forecasts for next year. I'd like to address that by saying that we as a town have always strived to be extremely conservative in revenue projections. I believe Wendy said just a couple days ago that there is not a year that she's been here that we haven't exceeded forecasts on revenue collections. With that said, just because it's never happened doesn't mean it won't. Proposed budget includes a robust contingency to address this very situation. I'll deal with contingency later on in the presentation. Next. Earlier I mentioned that half the budget is comprised of resources. Resources are certainly inclusive of revenues, but they also include beginning fund balance and transfers into funds. Next. Since revenues are a primary focus of the budget, let's examine them in a little more detail. As you well know, the primary operating revenue sources for the town are sales taxes, state revenue sharing, and utility billing charges. Other revenues of the town are noted on the slide. And those are pretty standard for all cities and towns in the state of Arizona. Next. The other half of the budget equation balancing resources are requirements. And requirements are certainly inclusive of expenditures, but also include transfers out of funds, contingency, and potentially an ending fund balance. Next. Like revenues are usually focused on for resources, expenditures tend to be the focus for requirements. What I want to do here is highlight some of the groupings of expenditures. Different governments can group expenditures different ways. These are essentially lenses or prisms through which to make sense of the data. The town utilizes a format generally accepted for cities and towns in the state of Arizona with its groupings, which are listed on the slide and presented in the comprehensive annual financial report. These groupings essentially provide a broad overview of where the money is being spent. Next. Earlier, I mentioned one-time versus ongoing revenues and expenditures and the attempt by the town to balance these. This slide lists a few expenditure categories and how they are typically viewed. So personnel typically is viewed as an ongoing cost because generally speaking, we don't hire and fire people on an annual basis within a budget year. So we note that to operate the town, it takes personnel to do that. We're a service-based industry. So personnel would be an ongoing cost. Operations and maintenance is also typically an ongoing cost. These are costs that, you know, we'll deal with this. I've got a slide specific to this, but, you know, they include training and utility costs and supplies and other services that the town contracts for. So typically those are ongoing costs to operate the town and allow it to function properly. Capital outlay is typically a one-time cost. It's typically viewed like a one-time cost. Sometimes there are some ongoing capital costs that happen year over year, but generally speaking, the view on capital is that it's a one-time cost. And then debt service, proceeds from debt service are typically one-time, but expenditures for debt service are typically ongoing because you have the principal and interest that need to be paid to pay off the debt. So typically those are viewed as ongoing costs. Next. So like most governments, the bulk of the town's operating expenditures are found in the personnel category, and this is true of any service-based industry, and it's certainly true for us. And those personnel costs include, you know, they include fringe benefits, payroll taxes, et cetera. Next. The balance of what are viewed as operational costs are found in operations and maintenance. As the slide mentions, typically this is the first area to be cut in a budget reduction. Town staff in this budget process have trimmed $1.39 million from initial requests due to the pandemic for next fiscal year. Next. Capital items are also included in the budget this evening. I know the slide says $50,000, but actually the town capitalizes items greater than $5,000. The $50,000 amount is really specific to the town's CIP, which we'll tackle in a second. Capital items are inventoried and depreciated and include vehicle replacements. Next. Contingency can be called various terms, but basically what we're talking about is an account that protects governments from the unexpected. It is a buffer. And as noted on the slide, no actual costs are posted to this account. Rather, the town reallocates out of the budgetary account into lines that need additional spending capacity. These reallocations per town policy require town council approval. The other thing a robust contingency does is buy a government time to change course and be thoughtful and responsive to challenges rather than be reactionary. If amounts are not reallocated out of contingency, the money, if it exists, simply carries over into the following fiscal year. Next. The town manager's recommended budget includes a 10-year capital improvement program. A separate presentation has been prepared specifically to go over this, so I don't want to spend too much time on it tonight. However, I do want to highlight the purpose of the plan is to think ahead and plan for major capital projects in the future. As mentioned before, these major capital projects cost more than $50,000, so they require a higher level of attention and visibility for public transparency. Is a planning document that gets updated and projects get reprioritized on an annual basis. Next. Because the budget is a forecast or estimate, it must be compared against actual results, which is where budget monitoring comes into play. Budget monitoring provides both internal and external accountability to the local government. Next. So before I conclude this evening, I have a couple closing thoughts. Generally speaking, the way the town functions financially, there really is a disconnect and dependency between the town's main revenue sources and its expenditures. And what I mean by this is that sales taxes and state revenue sharing are going to be what they're going to be, irrespective of what the town budgets or spends. Said differently, the expenditures included in this budget do not impact sales tax rates or revenues. So the question is, what if revenues don't come in as forecasted? What happens then? And the short answer to this question is that the town will rely upon its contingency and reserves, craft a thoughtful change in course by reducing spending, and town staff will communicate and consult with council. I read an article this morning regarding a publicly traded company, and the article stated that there is only one way for a company to survive a pandemic, and that is to ride through it. It further stated that the company's best companies best prepared to do this are those that have low debt levels and high reserves. This principle applies equally to state and local governments. Our town is fortunate to have been responsibly managed historically, as we have excellent reserves and low debt. While it's true that none of us know the future, now is not the time to panic and make fear-based decisions. The goal is to weather the storm, learn from it, emerge stronger and more nimble and more efficient. And finally, I want to kind of talk about the budget, again, the town manager's recommended budget, and just basically briefly state that this, for all intents and purposes, is a baseline budget. And what I mean by that is we're not, the town and what it's proposing is not proposing any additional increases in service levels or plus-ups. I mean, and you saw on the town manager's initial slide, the cuts there of about 10%. What we're trying to do basically is ride through the reduction in revenues, keep service levels as stable and as consistent as possible for our residents. And then if we have to adapt and adjust in the fiscal year because revenues don't really come up to what our forecasts say they ought to be or whatnot, we will adapt and adjust again and rely upon our contingency and reserves. And with that, I'd like to thank you for your time and turn the reins over to Wendy Gomez for the town's five-year forecast. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, for the opportunity to present to you tonight. This is our preliminary five-year forecast. We're presenting for the general fund and highway fund this evening. Next slide, please. Just a couple pointers. The five-year forecast is required per our adopted financial policies. This should be considered a preliminary forecast. There's very little data available right now on what the full impacts of COVID are going to be. So this forecast should be considered preliminary. We plan to come back in the late fall with an updated forecast once we have more information available. The forecast is a snapshot based on current known information to us, so status quo, current town boundaries, that sort of thing. But the five-year forecast serves as a foundation for future budgets. So we jump back to our forecast and look at it early on as we're starting next year's budget process. And just as a reminder, some of the sources that we rely on for our five-year forecast are listed there in the PowerPoint. They include the University of Arizona, the Joint Legislative Budget Committee, and a few other sources, as well as the expert knowledge, expertise and judgment from town management and staff. This forecast has been built upon this information and data that's available, but again, that information is somewhat limited at this time. Next slide. First, the general fund, going through some of the assumptions on the revenue side. We do assume some of those more sensitive revenue sources that are being particularly impacted right now, such as retail, restaurant and bar, bed tax. We assume a continued slump of those sources into the following fiscal year, so fiscal year 21-22. In terms of our construction sales tax and building permit revenues, we do anticipate in the forecast to see an earlier rebound in some of those revenue sources. There may be some pent-up demand in both residential and commercial building activity from folks staying on the sidelines through the current situation. We could see a buyer's market potentially in residential. We do have in our building permit forecast, the effect of build-out is still in there. It's in the tail end of the forecast, but that could be extended. You know, the fact that people may be sitting on the sidelines right now, that could push some of those impacts out even further into the future. As a reminder for the state shared income tax, That impact is going to be felt a little later in the forecast because of the two-year lag between the collections at the state and when we receive those collections. We do have in the forecast normal development and recreation fee increases in the budget, particularly in the near term. Our SFR permit forecast ranges from 200 to 400 permits per year, and we do not assume any annexations in the forecast. So this forecast is based on current town boundaries. Next slide. Our general fund expenditure assumptions. After fiscal year 2021, we do have merit increases of 2.5% to 3% per year and step increases each year in the five-year forecast. We do assume increased pension contribution costs. There could be some potential impact on investment performance as a result of COVID. And so, you know, that remains to be seen. I mean, the plan is viewed with a long-term lens, but we did want to be conservative there. And so we factored in a little bit of additional cost increase in the near term. For our health insurance premiums, we assume normal increases there with some gradual transition towards a bit of increased employee coverage of dependent costs. So working towards that 75-25 split with employees covering 25% and the town covering 75% dependent costs. The town manager did request that we include some capacity. It is limited, though, for potential new FTEs in the forecast. I did want to note that after fiscal year 2021, we do have the CARES Act capacity removed. If you recall, we said both revenues and expenditures in of $1 million in fiscal year 2021. So that has been removed from the forecast after that year. We do assume that there may be some pent-up O&M needs in the near term after fiscal year 2021. So as Dave mentioned, we did trim considerably from O&M for fiscal year 2021. And so there may be some pent-up facility needs. Employee training was another area that was trimmed pretty significantly. We would continue to utilize our vehicle reserves. We've been setting aside those reserves each fiscal year, and we're at a very stable position now with those, where those are in the fund and available to be used for that purpose. We do continue to fund our facility repair and maintenance program in the forecast. Our forecast includes our continued commitment per our financial policies to place 5% of our projected sales tax collections towards capital investments. And finally, it's important to note that the forecast does preserve Council's 25% fund balance reserve policy throughout each year of the forecast. Next slide. So this is just a graphical representation of the expenditures, revenues, and fund balance with those assumptions. You do see the strain in the near term as a result of COVID, but then the fund stabilizing thereafter as we continue recovery. Next slide. These are the figures behind the chart, and we have the beginning fund balance there at the top, and then the first slide is our revenue sources. So just walking through some of those assumptions, you'll see on the state shared revenue, for example, I did mention the lag and the impact for the income taxes. And so you'll see that there. Charges for services with the normal fee increases that are placed in there. On the license and permit side, the declines towards the outer year of the forecast, again, are for the impacts of potential build out. And then the taxes there as well, see that gradual rebound coming out as we recover. Next slide, please. These are the numbers for the expenditures. Brought over that beginning fund balance again, so you can see that in the representation. And then on the expenditures, you would see the personnel with the merits and steps included each year and some of those benefit assumptions in there. On the O&M side, you do see a bit of a boost in fiscal year 22-23. I will mention we do have some growth, you know, fed into fiscal year 21-22, but the reason why that number is lower, again, is because of that CARES Act capacity that's been pulled out. And then you finally see the surplus and deficits that are forecasted in the fund, the ending fund balance, and then, as I mentioned, the reserve as percentage of expenditures is at least 25% throughout the forecast. Next slide. Moving on to the highway fund, the revenue assumptions there. We do assume a near-term boost in our HERF revenues after fiscal year 2021 due to pent-up demand and the economic recovery coming out of COVID. After that near-term boost, we do assume an average growth of about 3% each year, and that's consistent with projections that we get from the Arizona Department of Transportation. I should mention that the HERF forecast assumes preservation of the state's public safety fee. That has helped reduce the amount that's swept from cities and towns to fund DPS. And so the forecast does assume that if that fee were discontinued, that replacement funding would come into play to preserve that. Also, I'll mention the reimbursement from the RTA for contract administration of our LaToya roadway project ends after fiscal year 2021. That is subject to the timeline of the project. And on the expenditure side, you would see the personnel reduction as well as that temporary staff comes offline once the project is completed. Next slide. Highway fund expenditure assumptions. Our personnel increases in the forecast are consistent with the assumptions that we made with the general fund. Again, I'll mention the reduction in personnel that you'll see in fiscal year 21-22 corresponds to the temporary staff associated with the LaToya project. Our O&M assumptions are also consistent with the general fund in terms of potentially a bit of a boost in the near term. Same as the general fund, we are utilizing our vehicle reserve program to fund our needed vehicle replacements. Our pavement preservation funding, we have pretty significant funding in each year of the forecast. That funding ranges from 1.4 to 1.8 million per year, and that'll maintain our excellent OCI rating for the town. Our other capital funding is consistent with our 10-year CIP. I will mention for the Shannon Road construction project, that's a pretty significant project cost, and that timeline is assumed over two fiscal years in the forecast in order to provide adequate fund balance. Our fund balance in the forecast ranges from about $450 to $1.6 million towards the outer years of the forecast. Next slide, please. This is just the chart for the highway fund. You'll see pretty stable overall. We intentionally draw down the fund balance for that Shannon Road project, and then you'd see as our HERF revenues grow each year, you'd see the fund balance continue to stabilize and grow. Next slide, please. The numbers for the highway fund, this is the revenues. You can see the beginning fund balance there. You see our state shared revenues, which is our HERF, growing pretty conservatively each year, as I mentioned. The grants are the contract administration proceeds that we get from the RTA, so those do drop off after LaToya is completed. And then for our other smaller revenue sources, just kind of slow, steady growth there with the licenses and permits. Some of that reduced revenue in the outer years is development based. Next slide, please. On the expenditures, again, bringing the fund balance over so you can see it each fiscal year, the personnel and O&M assumptions, as I mentioned, are in line with what we assumed for the general fund. And then on the capital, the bulk of that capital budget obviously is pavement preservation. And then in the early years of the forecast, fiscal year 21-22 and 22-23 is the Shannon Road project as well. And so finally, you would see the anticipated surplus or deficit in the fund and the ending fund balance coming down to a low of about $450 in fiscal year 22-23 And then it grows with recovery and as the Shannon Road project is completed. And I believe that's my last slide, if there are any questions.
Okay, so at this point, thank you, Wendy and David and Mary. At this point, I'd like to open it up to questions from the council. As a reminder, largely to the public who's joined us this evening, purpose of the study session is to have the opportunity for the council to dig a little deeper on a particular topic. There's no decisions in a study session. So I will give priority to council to any questions that they have. Once they've concluded, I will open it to the public if there are any blue cards for the three items that have been presented thus far. So council. Vice Mayor Barrett.
Okay, see if I can unmute myself here. Thank you. I understand that it's challenging to put together a budget in these difficult and uncertain times and circumstances, and so I appreciate everyone trying to come together and do that. I've got a list of questions. I don't know if I want to ask them all right now, but I want to start out by saying that, you know, when I first, I don't know if you can see on the thing, but when I first went to pick up my budget, my first sort of question was, where's the rest of it? So, because this is my budget from this year, and I still have in my bedroom my budget from last year. And so, you know, my budget from last year had 26 tabs, and my budget from this year has 4 tabs. This one has about half the pages. And so, you know, I kind of looked into it, and in the previous year's budget, we were always given kind of a list of where the money was going to go rather than an overall bucket. And so my first sort of question is, or request, is that I would like that I would like to be able to see the rest of the budget just the same so I can easily compare, you know, how things are going year to year. It's hard for me when we make changes in the way that we report things because it makes it more difficult for me to compare the year over year. And I do appreciate about the new budget that there are moments where they're comparing the actuals. That was something that we asked for in last year's budget cycle rather than just comparing previous year's budgets, but to also look at the actuals. And so I did notice that, and I was happy that there were some actuals included for comparing previous years. I did want to comment about, or this is sort of a question. When we talk about from the very beginning how much lower this budget is than last year's budget, and it's around $11 million lower, isn't $6 million of that the bond that the council chose not to do in the community center fund? Or how many million of that in last year's budget is due to that bond that the council chose not to move forward with?
Wendy, you want to answer that question? I believe it's three.
Wendy, sure, yes. We did have $3 million in the current fiscal year budget in that fund.
Okay, thanks. That clarifies that. Okay, so $3 million of that was due to what the council didn't spend on that bond. Is that correct? Okay, let's see. So let me look through some of my questions and see which ones are pressing enough. So based on our five-year forecast, I'm also wondering if I can receive some of the information that was used to put together the five-year forecast, because you know, I've been reading information from various sources and things like that. So, you know, I'd love to just see that information, whether it's from the University of Arizona or otherwise. And then in terms of more specific questions, let's see. On page 34, where you talked about the Shannon Road project, is any of the Shannon Road project going to be paid for with impact fees or anything related to that? Or is the town bearing the entire cost of that project out of our ongoing revenues?
Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor, I believe I don't believe we have any impact fees planned to spend on that project, but I would possibly defer to perhaps Paul Kiesler to verify that, but I'm almost certain right now it is just programmed into the highway fund.
Okay. Okay, and then we talked about having merit and step increases in future years of 2.5% to 3%. But I guess I was sort of under the impression from our previous strategic leadership plan and the discussions we've had that we were aiming for higher merit and step increases than that. Is that something that's changed since the pandemic? Are we doing a one-year pause and then we're gonna aim for the higher amount that we had, or have we adjusted because of the pandemic and the recession down to a lower merit and step increase?
I'll take that, Vice Mayor. We, as I mentioned, this is our preliminary five-year forecast, and our out years are not a budget. So what we are doing is basically putting in these projections what we think we want to potentially see, and it's a balance between what we think we can afford. All of that would be adjusted, obviously, when we would come back with a following year budget. Could be more, we take out the capacity for the additional staff, you know, we make all those different adjustments. It really is intended to be a snapshot to see where do we think we're gonna be in 5 years. And what, you know, probably the most important piece is just looking at that bar or those, that line graph. We're probably gonna need, you know, we're gonna be a little bit below, but then we quickly catch up after two fiscal years. And so that's what we were trying to do. That can all be massaged. You know, we have a very robust financial forecasting piece of software. And so all of these things can be adjusted. But at this point, until we get some more information, we really can't play with it. Then we figure out, you know, what is it that we need, and we move forward. So we will be coming back to you in the fall with an updated one, and any of the input that we hear from council here, we'll be glad to run a scenario on that.
Okay. Okay, that kind of answers that question. I just wasn't sure if, you know, this year we're taking a temporary pause because of the pandemic, and then we were gonna try and get back on track to what we previously discussed, or if
we're
sort of saying this is where we think it's gonna be for the next 4 or 5 years. So thank you for clarifying that. Let me see. We mentioned how we're working towards employee dependents taking on more of their healthcare costs, but yet at the same time, we're taking on more of our employees' healthcare costs. So how does that balance against each other? And why would we choose to go that approach rather than maybe a more balanced between employees and dependents, et cetera?
Yes, Vice Mayor, we made a change only in the high deductible, which is a more affordable plan for the town. And so in doing the math, getting more employees on the high deductible plan ends up being a benefit to us that we can offer that change for employee only, not for dependent only. The other benefit to us was that in our recruitment efforts, particularly for police, having one option where there was 100% employer paid insurance for a new police recruit was a benefit to us. The council, I believe it was 2 years ago, did adopt an ordinance change and a change in the MOU that shifted the town portion paid for dependent care from 80 to 75. We are doing that gradually so as to not shock the employees. But our math indicated and our consultant indicated that this change for the high deductible was still a benefit to the plan.
Okay, what percentage of our employees are on the high deductible plan, roughly?
I don't know off the top of my head, but we can get that information for you.
Okay, and then I'd also just like to know what the total cost is of that change. And then I have one more question about the health insurance question. We're self-insured, right?
That's correct.
So if heaven forbid the pandemic were to come through and hit a number of employees of our town, which I really hope will not happen, and I don't think will happen. But what would be the result of that? Would there be CARES Act money that would help us cover that additional cost, or will that be entirely the burden of the town on this next coming fiscal year?
I don't know if CARES Act funding, Vice Mayor, would be eligible for reimbursement for actual healthcare costs. I'll research that to find out if that's possible. We have a very strong reserve to be able to pay for catastrophic illnesses, regardless of what they are, whether it's COVID or, accidents or neonatal babies or whatever it is. That's one of the reasons. We also have a reinsurance. So we have a certain level, and then if it goes over that, we have a reinsurance that picks up the difference. And so our firm that advises us on it does those projections out, looks at our experience, and even we discussed this in our rate setting process with them, and they were still comfortable with the projections that they were making based on our experience. Our experience and claims went down by over 15% last year. That's why we're able to offer this premium holiday to our employees. We have a very strong and stable plan, and even if we had some hospitalizations, we would, our prediction is still that we would be within the premiums that we're receiving for the care.
Okay, let me just clarify. So our strong reserves for the healthcare plan, is that the town's reserves, or do we have separate reserves for the healthcare plan? Separate reserves, okay. Mm-hmm. And then the reinsurance kicks in for each individual, or when the town hits a certain limit?
Individual, we have certain claim levels, then the reinsurance kicks in. It doesn't happen very often because you have to, I don't recall what our reinsurance levels are, but we have that in place.
Okay, thanks for clarifying. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to address that potential unknown.
Absolutely.
From the future. So I think that's all I have for the moment.
So Member Pena?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My first question is to you, Ms. Jacobs. With regards to the COVID, it's my understanding that it's possible that Governor Ducey is going to provide additional funding to Oro Valley, actually all towns that didn't receive initial funding. And so how is that going to look for us? And will it be specific to COVID related expenses? Because it's supposed to be somewhere in the neighborhood of about $5 million. Is that correct?
Mr. Mayor and Councilmember Pena, I asked Dave Gephardt to sit in on the call this afternoon, and he has not had an opportunity to brief me. So I would love to hear from David, then we'll both know.
Okay, well, so you'll inform council once we know that.
Well, if Dave has some preliminary information he would like to share, that would be great.
Great, okay.
Yeah, thank you for the question, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Pena. So the call I set on this afternoon at 4 p.m. from the governor's office, they did address that allocation specific to cities and towns that had populations of less than $500,000. It will be a direct allocation, and so far as I understood, and I'm going to dig into it to gain further clarification, but it will be, it is really a direct reimbursement for public safety costs. So it would reimburse us for our police costs, our direct costs. It does not include overtime. It's just straight time plus all ERE costs, benefits, taxes, et cetera, that are wage related. So there is a formula that they utilized for determining that. There's a website that they've set up, and there's steps, an application process, obviously, that we would need to follow to gain reimbursement for those costs. But that is something that that is new, late breaking, and there's still more information for me to gather on the specifics of it. I can't tell you what the amount will be at this point.
Okay, all right, great, thank you.
Thank you.
And my next question is in reference to the operating expenses that you went over, David. And so my question is, and I apologize, if we could get to the general fund expenditures page. It lists the expenditures with personnel, O&M, capital outlay, and it shows the reserves at 35.8% for the fiscal year. So it's in the general fund discussion.
On one of the slides, Councilmember Pena?
Yes.
Oh, okay, okay.
I believe it's slide number 3.
And it's also in the budget book. Thank you.
The budget snapshot at the beginning, Councilmember Pena?
The general fund expenditures. And it shows the expenditures and the reserve percentage of 35.8%.
That information's on slide 3.
It's going to be under the section because it was very difficult to see the page numbers.
Is this the slide
of the 5-year forecast?
Oh, yeah, it's also available in the 5-year forecast.
Okay. What slide is that, Wendy?
I'm sorry. I just got that presentation in front of me. So page-wise, maybe somewhere around
31. It's slide 31.
Thank you.
Okay. There we go.
So, David, I mentioned this last year, and the reason I'm bringing it up again is because some of the discussion that we're having is that the general fund, we're having issues with the operating costs, et cetera, relative to the revenues. And so my question is, capital outlay is somewhat discretionary. And so if that's the case, is there a way to look at this with regard to the council requirement of the reserves on the surplus? So for example, we show that we would have $10,350,590 as our 25% coverage. And so if we were to subtract the capital outlay from the expenditures, that essentially would give about an additional $600,000 available for operating costs. And so my question is it possible? I know we look at 25% of budget expenditures, but if capital outlay is somewhat discretionary and not a fixed expenditure, is it possible to do an exception so that it allows for an additional amount of monies to actually stay in the fund to be used for operating expenditures?
Yeah, Councilmember Pena, members of the council, Mr. Mayor, thank you. It is possible, but I have strong reservations about that. One of the challenges that happens when you take something that's really dedicated towards a one-time cost or one-time expense and then redirect it to an ongoing type cost and ongoing expense is that it becomes very difficult to claw that back. It becomes very, in the future years, it becomes very difficult to make that allocation to refund your capital. So, you know, I think I always caution against it. Yeah, is it possible? Of course it's possible. I mean, that can be utilized as a budget fixing measure to try to fund an operational shortfall or a budget deficit or a structural imbalance. But I just think it's challenging just because moving forward in the next fiscal year, it becomes almost an implicit assumption that that's going to be available for ongoing costs again. And then I guess in addition to that, what we try to do as a town, as policy, is we try to balance our one-time costs, our capital costs, with one-time revenue sources. And that also becomes a challenge that if this amount of capital that we're funding out of the general fund is funded by a one-time revenue source, and then we're redirecting that for an operating type, ongoing type expenditure or cost category, then that places us in future trouble in future years. It just exacerbates that issue because those revenue sources aren't necessarily available in future years, and yet we still have the ongoing costs associated with that transfer. So is it possible? Yes, it's possible, long story short, but I would strongly recommend trying to avoid that option.
Okay. It just seemed to me that if that were on a year-to-year basis where we determine what our capital outlook is going, our outlay is going to be, it would be discretionary year over year over year. So to allow it to be not included in that calculation, I thought maybe that might be a way to be able to have more operating.
If we could guarantee that funding source was an ongoing funding source, then I think that becomes a little more palatable. But even then, to try to claw that back and to change that dynamic moving forward, it can become problematic. Can it be done? Absolutely, it can be done. But it can kind of change things. It can kind of change the expectation of future councils and what's proposed. And really, the capital for a town of our size and complexity, the capital, the amounts that we dedicate to capital are really critical. To the well-being, to the well-functioning of our government. So I would, again, just kind of strongly recommend that we try to avoid that if at all possible.
Okay. All right. And then the last question I have is on the $1.6 million that is transferred in to the general fund, can you give a background as to why that came from the fiscal year 18-19 budget and now we're transferring it in to the 2021 budget? And the reason I'm asking that is because the question is had we had that money available back in 18-19, technically we would have had the monies to be able to use, right? Because we were, if it were accounted for, correct? So can you explain how that happened? And will we have a situation where a fund will be there, but not there, right?
Councilman Berpina, members of the town council, what we're referring to here specifically is our bed tax fund monies. Just to clarify that, and rededicating, repurposing those monies to be really unrestricted, to take some of the restrictions off of those funds. The issue here, as I understand it, is that. So we had we took care of this. If you look at last year's comprehensive annual financial report for 2019, we actually took care of that transfer into the general fund in that comprehensive annual financial report reported for last year. Basically, what happened was we thought that our auditors were going to allow us to keep those funds or to unrestrict those funds, and they ended up saying, no, you have a policy in effect that won't allow us to unrestrict those for you. So it was kind of a discussion that happened after the year had passed. So we got into this fiscal year, we started closing out our books, getting ready for the audit, had the discussion with the auditors, and they said, no, we have to report these still as being committed funds. And so really, for that policy to have been changed, it would have had to have been changed prior to June 30th of last fiscal year. And we weren't aware as staff that was going to be problematic. Now that our auditor has said, you have to still keep these funds committed. Now we're going to propose that policy change at a future council meeting before the end of this fiscal year so that we don't run into this issue moving forward. So, it was something that was unfortunate. It was something that, kind of a discussion with our auditor that we just weren't aware of at the time that was going to be a problem. Okay. I hope that explains it.
No, it does. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Was that it, Councilmember Pena?
Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Jones-Ivy. Uh, Council member.
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. I want to thank everyone, especially the previous council members, because most of my questions were answered. One question that I do have for David, and David, I know you might not have an answer right now, but with the monies that we're expecting from the CARES Act, I'm going to assume that those monies are for this first wave. What happens if we go through a second wave? And then where are the funds going to come for to help us manage that? Or has the governor said it all? If we do have a second wave, is that something that will come from our general funds, or just how will that be handled?
Thank you, Council Member Jones Ivy, members of the Town Council. So the call that I was on this afternoon, that the governor, he had released, or he was gonna allocate, I guess, $450 million to cities and towns in the state that were less than $500,000 or 500,000 in population. So we'll have to find out what that specific allocation is for our town, but those monies are available through December 31 of 2020. So they will carry us through the balance of this calendar year. Now what happens after that? So I'm hoping that if we did have a second wave, that would capture that time frame. However, if there's a second or third wave and it really falls outside the bounds of that, and I think there's a couple options here. One option certainly is that maybe the federal government will step in and reallocate some more monies, or designate some more monies to cities and towns, which we could certainly explore that possibility, and we would, obviously. The other option, of course, is just to rely upon our contingency and our reserves to carry us through those challenges.
Okay, thank you very much. Also, I would like to join my voice with getting the trend that we had for last year. I believe it comes out of our Munis system. Is that right, Mary?
Yes, Councilmember Jones Ivy, I've heard loud and clear. We will be running those Munis reports for you, and be happy to provide those with council.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Is that it, Councilmember Jones Ivy?
Yes, for now.
Thank you. Councilmember Solomon?
Thank you. I have a question on the same slide, number 31, that was just up for Rhonda's question. The general fund, page 31. Okay. Can you go over generally what are the transfers out line on the general funds? They vary each year. They start off at like about $1.7 million and go up to $2.4
million. Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Solomon, that is composed of our 5% transfer to the capital fund, our 5% of our projected sales tax collections, and the other piece of that amount are the transfers out to the debt service fund to pay debt service.
Okay, great. Thank you. A question on the bed tax funds. Now, my understanding was that the state had, by statute, restrictions on what we could use the bed tax funds for, that a certain percent had to be used for a certain reason. Has that changed? Are they now allowed to be used for any item we want?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Solomon, I believe per state statute, 25% of our bed tax collections, so essentially 1.5 of our 6% collections, does still need to be contributed towards economic development purposes.
Okay.
And that has not changed.
Okay, that's what I thought. I would be a little cautious on using those funds for other purposes than traditionally they've been used for economic development and for our participation in groups like Visit Tucson and so forth that are doing a promotion that are bringing people into Oro Valley over to the Hilton that are generating these bed taxes. And of course, in addition to the bed tax, those folks are here spending money, so it's a definitely an economic boost. So I'm just saying that, you know, we want to take a close look at whether we would want to use that 75% that's unrestricted for other purposes. But that's something we can look at another meeting. Then a few comments on the steps and the raises.
Member Solomon?
Oh, yes.
Ms. Jacobs was going to make a comment.
Oh, okay, great.
If I may, Councilmember Solomon, so one of the reasons why council agreed to change your financial policies when I brought forward this to you is because on the bed tax, we are more than meeting our minimum requirement in terms of what we are, what the town is required to spend on economic development with our contribution to Visit Tucson, our economic development activities, advertising, you know, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. What the flexibility brings in making the bed tax simply another one of your sales taxes is that as those revenue collections go up, the town has other expenses and you as the council need to be able to allocate those resources to more than just pure economic development. And so, in fact, while we still make sure that we make our minimum requirements under state law, that that is now simply one of your sales tax collections, and it is deposited into your general fund per council financial policy. So, but we are mindful of it, and Councilmember Solomon, that's one of, you know, one of the reasons why, in the spirit of the remaining fund balance of that bed tax fund, that we'll be bringing forward to you a change in the your GASB policy, is the inclusion of the Steam Pump Ranch garage, because that really is very much a tourist generated item. And so, you know, that was kind of in the spirit, but it's not a requirement. And so, you know, that was a part of the thinking in bringing that forward to you this fiscal year. And we will get into that more with Parks and Rec presentation and also capital, but I did just want to mention that.
Okay, that's great. That's just what I had in mind, is that you addressed that we're mindful of it and how we use it. And that was my recollection, that when we had taken a look at this about 2 years ago. So just, all right, great. As I said, a few comments, one on the steps and the raises. I know that was one of our priorities at our strategic retreat, particularly we were concerned about recruitment and keeping our highly qualified personnel. We already know that we're somewhat below the average in overall compensation, and we were getting concerned about more difficulty in recruitment, particularly with police officers and other qualified staff members. So with that, I would really like us to be able to revisit that on the second quarter in October. Hopefully we'll have a better idea of what's going on with the whole situation. The other thing is our comments on the healthcare costs is, yes, first you made the very good important point, because we have that insurance. So although we are self-insured, we basically have catastrophic insurance. So if all of a sudden we accumulate a lot of losses, it is not going to adversely affect our healthcare account. I mean, it will obviously impact it, but it's not something that's going to be a financial catastrophe. Also, keep in mind that through the 2000s, when we had a regular healthcare policy, our costs were going up astronomically each year. Anyone who had private insurance remembers that. 20% increase. Sometimes you were happy to see just the 20% increase. Some people were seeing 60, 80% increases. And at that time, town staff and the current town manager looked at that and realized that we could go to this self-insured option, and we saved a fortune. So keep in mind that over the last 10 years or so, we have been saving an enormous amount of money by being self-insured with our health insurance than if we had been paying premiums. And as we said, our staff has really bought into this concept and actively worked to hold down the healthcare costs. So that's another component. Even if there's a second wave of COVID and we start seeing people with it, keep in mind, we've accumulated 10 years of savings and we have our catastrophic insurance effectively. So I want to assure the public that we're not in a situation where our staff's healthcare is at risk or the town is in a position where we are at risk. So just wanted to put that a little more perspective. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Yeah, thank you. I had a few questions and then Council Member Rodman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have a question, and maybe I could have found it and didn't, but in the five-year forecast, we talked about the pension contributions, and I'm wondering what we use to project those 5 years. So I assume that includes the PSPRS, and what's in this next year's budget for the PSPRS?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Rodman, what's in the budget for the recommended budget is obviously our full contribution. We do have an increase in our rate, and so that full contribution is included in the budget. And we did not include my recommended budget does not include a supplemental PSPRS contribution, but rather a recommendation that if the revenues come in on budget or stronger, that the council consider an additional contribution at the end of the fiscal year that would come out of your contingency. And so there is capacity in the contingency, assuming our projections are reasonable. And I would come back in the springtime with something for council to discuss.
Well, it seems to me that in the current year, we were budgeting the amount for 1 year, as well as they had billed us, in effect, for almost $2 million toward the unfunded liability. So my question really is that in this coming year budget, and do we have a number, or are we just assuming what the number will be that would include a catch-up amount?
In the actual formula or our rate, there is a certain proportion of that, a significant proportion that is targeted to the unfunded liability. I don't know if David or Wendy have that at their fingertips, but we will be glad to dig that up and make sure that we get that to you.
Again, it's a significant amount of money, or at least it
yes,
was
it
this
is.
Year, in order to get us paying off that unfunded liability over a shorter period of time than actually we could have done. So yes, I'm interested in terms of, and then I'm also interested in what we used for the four out years in terms of what does it look like. Okay.
Thank you.
Council Member Nicholson.
Okay. Good question. I had another concern as well with the budget. Warren, who decided to make the budget the way it is? It's less detailed than I don't know if it's a timing thing or because of COVID it was running behind or.
Mr. Mayor and council members, that was a conversation as we got a new chief financial officer, and I'll let David speak to this himself. He brought new ideas and approaches, and this is a very common format in local governments to present a budget very similar to the annual adopted budget. And so his recommendation was we move forward with it this year, and we can still provide you, and I will provide you with those line items per your request. So, but if you look at many other budgets in the area, you'll find that this is very typical.
I guess I would just like to have the detailed report and put in our binder, and then imagine it's only like $3 or $5 more of extra printed paper. So it's
happy to provide you with that information.
It makes it a lot easier for us to look through it. And then two that are pretty associated with each other, the fleet fund, I know the automakers are going through issues now, and they're offering 0% financing. Some of their trucks are, you know, 25-30% off. I know with fleet deals it's a little different, but have we thought about front loading? I know spending money on vehicles is the worst way in personal finance, but, you know, as a town, we spend $700,000 to $900,000 every year. I don't know if there's a way that we can maybe negotiate a bulk purchase and try and front load some of our costs now, where we can maybe get 0% financing will save us the finance charge for a few years. And then, you know, if we can get 25% off based on what we get on normal good economic years, I'm sure we get pretty good deals right now. And, you know, that save us money down the road that we can use for other types of issues. But kind of front load some of our purchases for the next 2 years.
We're going to have a careful, balanced approach here to our expenditures this year to make sure that we also give ourselves enough wiggle room that during the course of the fiscal year, if our numbers aren't coming in as strongly as they should, that we still give us a little bit of capacity to make some cuts. However, there are some vehicles that are at the top of the list, like replacing our police vehicles, and those will be done sooner rather than later. We don't need financing because we can pay cash for them. We have the cash. And we typically buy off of the state contract, and they negotiate very good deals. But we'd be happy to follow up with our chief procurement officer and see if we can't get some better deals.
Okay. And then somewhat attached to that, so we purchase $700,000 to $900,000 a year in vehicles. But when it's talking about how much money we get when we get rid of our old ones, we only make $70,000. So we lose 90% of the value of most of our cars. I mean, how long do we normally keep the cars for?
Well, I know just in speaking with the Chief Riley earlier today, I believe that all of the police vehicles that are being given up are at least 10 years old, 100,000 miles, and I think a 12-year-old vehicle. So they're no spring chickens with not a lot of value left on them.
Okay. That's it. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Gephardt, on slide 14, and you don't need to turn to it, you talked about transfers in. On the fund balance report, there's in the general fund a transfer end of $120,000. What is that?
So, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, what that represents is a transfer from our community center fund. That was a long-standing agreement to reimburse the general fund for the outlay that they, as far as I'm aware, and certainly jump in to correct me if I'm off base on this, town manager Jacobs, but to reimburse, because the general fund fronted the money for the acquisition of the community center fund. So it's basically a repayment for that purchase.
Thank you. There's also a transfer in the capital fund for $911,000 and some change. That is what?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, that is kind of, again, that's the 5% that we kind of set aside per our financial policies, just to make sure that our capital fund is adequately funded for needs of the upcoming fiscal year.
Thank you. And then on the other side of the column of expenditures, the transfer out under the community center fund, there's $278,000, and that is?
Oh boy, the $278,000. Wendy, do you have that one offhand?
Yes, I do. And Mr. Mayor, $120,000 of that obviously is the transfer to the general fund, and then the other piece of that is a transfer to the debt service fund to pay the principal and interest on the energy efficiency bonds that we issued.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. Mr. Gephardt, when you spoke of primary source of income for the town is sales taxes, could you just briefly elaborate what sales taxes we're talking about? It's not just simply retail. Sales tax.
Yeah, right. So, Mr. Mayor, members of the town council, certainly retail is a component or a piece of that, but there are other components. I'm sorry, my mind is kind of drawing a blank here. So
would that include bed tax, construction tax, utility?
Yes, construction certainly would be included in that. Do we include bed tax in that amount? I think we do, don't we, Wendy? correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm still trying to figure it out. But
me and you both.
Yes, we do, Dave.
Okay. So, yeah, so it is inclusive of bed tax, construction sales tax, and retail.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And when you spoke of workman's compensation, what is our record in regards to workman comp claims?
Mr. Mayor, members of council, we actually have a very good record. We have very few claims, and we've been very fortunate.
Safety conscious.
Very safety conscious, yes.
Yeah, wonderful. Thank you. And let me just think. I'm going to get to you, Vice Mayor. I just wanted to slip in here. No one was answered.
Mr. Mayor, if I may, this is Wendy. I do actually have the figure that Councilmember Rodman was looking for in terms of the PSPRS rate for next fiscal year and how much of that was for the unfunded liability.
Yeah.
That amount is just under 28%. So our total PSPRS rate for next fiscal year is 41.65%. So 27.67% of that is attributable to the unfunded liability.
Okay. Thank you. Vice Mayor Barrett. You need to unmute yourself.
Yeah, thanks. Sorry. It pops a little window up. I just have one more question for some more information. I saw that on our reductions from last fiscal year, it looks like we are reducing our general fund expenditures 3.7%. And I'd like some more information about what all of our neighboring jurisdictions are recommending in their budget in terms of their general fund expenditure reductions, because I tried to do a little bit of a preliminary survey and it looked like most were reducing their general fund 6% based on the uncertainties and unknowns. And so I just like, maybe if the staff could provide a little more context and information about what the other municipalities in our area are recommending in regards to their budget. And you can just send that to us, but yeah, thank you.
Certainly, and Mr. Mayor, members of council, we'll be happy to get some additional information. I do think it's important to point out every community does their budget just a little bit differently, so it may not necessarily be apples and oranges. And some communities will be impacted differently because they have significantly more retail that they're impacted, bed tax, different types of vehicles, for example. We have no car dealerships in Oro Valley. That is a huge source of revenues for certain, for certain communities. So while we'll provide it, I'm not sure it's very meaningful data to you, but we'll get a handful. Maybe the League of Arizona Cities and Towns has it. I think what would be more meaningful is a comparison of looking at, maybe sales tax reductions or that sort of thing. But we'll do what we can to pull some information together for you. We'll have it for you in the next week or so.
Okay, thank you.
Excuse me, Councilmember Solomon.
Thank you. Regarding that comparison, that concerns me. We're doing what's best for Oro Valley. We have specific needs, levels of service, income, and expenses. It's somewhat irrelevant what Scottsdale or Sara Rita or Marana are doing, whether they have other sources of income, other expenses. City of Tucson, they have their own fire department. We don't. So what's the point of saying, I want to see how we compare to other municipalities when they have different items in the budget? Are we supposed to reduce our budget by 6% because Marana is and lay people off? Are we supposed to reduce services? Are we supposed to increase our spending because we're only down 3% and other places are down 1%? What's the objective? What information is that going to provide for the council to make a policy decision? So before town staff spins their wheels trying to figure out every other municipality's budget, what is the outcome you're looking for? I don't see any benefit in that because, as mentioned, every community is totally distinct and Oro Valley is totally distinct. You've got the budget. If you've got a problem with it and say, I want to cut, I want to lay off people, I don't like a 3% cut, then say it. But why waste town staff time that's already spread thin on irrelevant comparisons? Thank you.
I don't see any other raised hands. I'd like to check in with our public that's joined us. Mr. Standish, do we have any blue cards?
Mr. Mayor, as of right now, we do not.
Okay. I think with that, let's take a 10-minute break. We'll resume at 7:40 and begin with the presentation with Public Works. Thank you. We'd like to resume our budget study session, and we'll begin with a presentation by Paul Kiesler, the Public Works Department. Just as a reminder, following Mr. Kiesler's presentation, we'll open it to the council for their questions, comments. As a reminder, it might be helpful to jot down the page number of the presentation of the PowerPoint that Paul will be giving if you have a specific question referencing that page. Following the council's questions, I'll open it briefly to any public comment. Paul?
Mayor Winfield, thank you very much. Next slide, please. So I hope to make this a tradition. I don't know if you remember last year's presentation, but I started off with a American Public Works Association Award. I get to do it again. So we're pretty proud of this. And that is the roundabout on Moore and La Cañada won the 2020 Arizona Project of the Year in transportation categories for projects under $5 million. So, you know, unfortunately, COVID stopped everything. It also stopped the national convention. So when things pick up after COVID here, we'll be representing the state in this category for the national award, and we'll bring it home. So maybe I'll have that or another thing for next year, i.e. La Cholla. So we'll see. Anyways, want to start off on a high note and keep it going up from here. So next slide, please. So, you know, on my presentation, I know this is review for most of you. Department of Public Works, we consist of five functional areas. That is administration, the highway fund, fleet and facility maintenance, our stormwater utility fund, which is a specific fund, and of course our transit services. Next slide, please. I know we have a lot of information on the Public Works slides because we do an awful lot. I'm not going to go through and read all of this. I know all of you have this detail in your budgets. You have copies of these slides as well. So fairly self-explanatory. I will be pointing out the high notes in here. And I'll also be talking about the differences between this year's budget and the proposed budget in front of you. One thing I do want to note on, at least on my presentation here, are the yellow boxes that you'll see sprinkled throughout the slides. Those yellow boxes are really where we tie into the Mayor and Council Strategic Leadership Plan. So on with the good stuff. Highlights and accomplishments for this year out of the administration group. So this is primarily funded out of the general fund. A huge thing that we've obtained is getting ADOT's commitment. And this took a lot of work and a lot of coordination, getting ADOT's commitment to rehabilitate Oracle Road. And that's rehabilitation from the town's southern limit up to Tangerine. And I think, don't need to belabor the point, it's needed. The other thing that I'm very, very proud of, what we were able to do was with our street maintenance staff, we were able to jump in and help with the Naranja Park construction. That's the new playground. We were actually in there before there were even plans. We were able to take the concept and knock out a lot of this work up front and very reasonably. So I'm very, very proud of my crews that got in there, rolled up their sleeves and jumped in. that segues into kind of where our primary duties and structure is. What you may notice is that we have our typical administration functions in this area, but we also have our streets operations staff here. This is where we fund them with the general fund. And the reason we do that is instead of in years past where they were in the highway fund is generally a restricted fund. So it made things much more complicated from a from an accounting standpoint to show that we were not spending any of our highway dollars on non-highway projects. So by putting the streets operations staff, which was done last year, and I'm very thankful for that, we're continuing on the same vein. We're able to do such things as be able to, at a moment's notice, go out and construct something that is not associated with the highway. For upcoming goals and objectives, two things I really want to point out, and a little bit of a misnomer that I put in here. I have creation of a CIP management committee. We already have a CIP management committee, but in the light of our continual process improvement within the town, we're reimagining this committee to add efficiencies, remove any duplications, and improve project coordination. It's really a fine-tuning. The other thing that, again, I'm going to sound a little bit like a broken record here, we want to support ADOT's rehabilitation efforts for Oracle Road and whatever they need. If they need us to help on any front, it's to push this project forward, and we're able and willing to be able to aid in their efforts. In looking at where we stand in administration between this year's budget and the proposed budget, we actually have a decrease in O&M. We're looking at about a 24.2% decrease. And the majority of that is actually as a finance function, and that's a decrease in general liability insurance. Although we are doing our part with reducing our travel and training, and we've had, because we've had very robust and efficient work on our facilities, we're going to be able to see some cost reductions out of efficiency improvements. Next slide. Transportation engineering. So this is in the highway fund, also RTA and PAG funds. Some highlights I want to talk about here are the continued and accelerated construction of La Jolla Boulevard. Big two-year project, 3 miles long. We're a bit ahead of schedule because of the closure that we were able to effect earlier in the summer. So we're looking at substantial completion mid to late August. And then after substantial completion, when it's opened up for you know, four lanes in the general public, we'll still be doing some ancillary stuff in through to October. But again, that's all shoulder and median work. But the bulk of the road will be done in mid-August, and we're very, very pleased with that. We're very pleased with how smooth this project has rolled, and commendation to our contractor and, of course, my staff who are associated with this. As I mentioned before, La Cañada Drive and Moore Roundabout, very successful project, and I have heard nothing but just absolute positive feedback from the public, and couldn't be happier with how that turned out. And then the Tangerine Road Safety Access Point, which is at the Safeway Bestoso Center. I've been chasing that thing for 10 years, and it's become a reality and addressed a major safety concern we had at that North Safeway exit. And again, couldn't be happier. We got that thing knocked out. Our primary duties is pretty self-explanatory with transportation engineering. We manage all aspects of the public road network. So, you know, just a highlight on our upcoming goals and objectives. Again, complete La Jolla Boulevard on budget and ahead of time. Couldn't ask for anything more. With regard to how we this area fares with the existing budget, we're really running at a flat budget. Now, we do have some FTEs, and we will be, those FTEs will be extinguished when the La Jolla Road project is done. We have three FTEs of staff out there on that project, and that was temporary for the project. Our expenditures are down by 6%, and it's, our professional services are down, our travel and training are down, and, of course, completed projects. We were able to knock a lot of stuff out. Next slide, please. So street maintenance in the highway fund, as I mentioned before, the highway fund is a restricted fund. With that, what we do have is all of our O&M and our materials are actually funded out of the highway fund. So staffs in the general fund, the materials that we use for streets, the materials that we use for anything road related, along with the ADC funding and our professional services, that all comes out of the highway fund. And again, this allows us to be able to use our street staff and their equipment on non-road projects when they're out of the general fund. Highlights and accomplishments. In here, I do want to say that we were, even though that we were working in the park, we were still able to stay ahead of the pavement preservation and crack seal our roads. We hate to crack seal our roads after pavement preservation. That was a little levity there. And we did over 90,000 pounds and 25 lane miles of crack sealing. That's actually with no ADC and a limited staff, we really were able to be efficient and knock that out quickly. And again, ahead of the pavement preservation efforts. So upcoming goals and objectives, at least for this portion. Now we are done with the Naranja project with the street staff. It's going to transfer over to the actual playground contractor. We'll return when the playground contractor is done for the final paving of the last portion of the parking lot. But we're going to go back and get back to our day job and get out there and get back on the streets and get to those some of those things we had to go ahead and delay because of the amount of resources that we have. And the other big thing is hopefully, I'm knock on some wood here, I don't know if you heard that, is resuming our ADC help. Again, ADC is absolutely key for us to stay ahead of the vegetative maintenance. Although we do have a contractor on board, we have AAA on board who's doing some spraying, we still need to get the ADC on board to just fulfill and get ourselves back to the pre-COVID condition that our streets were in. From a budgetary standpoint, we do have a little bit of an increase from this year onto the proposed, and that's not because of quantities. We're maintaining the same quantities, but of course with inflation and scarcity, we're looking at increased material costs. So next slide, please. Fleet and facility maintenance. This slide speaks for itself. We got a boatload of stuff done this year. Two things I really want to talk about are the Public Works CED front counter safety remodel. Please, all of council, if you have a chance, come on over and visit. Night and day difference. The amount of efficiency that we were able to get out of the new design, the safety that we're able to afford staff, the ability to separate the public from staffing. It's just a remarkable transformation. And again, I'd love to have any of you over, give you a guided tour, show you the differences. I know all of you have been in when we had the big round open counter space, but just amazing what we were able to capture and create more meeting rooms. And Hopi's now open. We're done, on budget, right on time, and could be happier with that project. The other big thing that I want to talk about was our town campus roof renewal project. That was the replacement of the roofs throughout town campus. All of the maintenance of our facility starts with the roofs. You get a leaky roof, sooner or later you got a collapsed facility. We were able to, with a contractor and a great price, knock out all the roofs. So again, very, very pleased that we were able to get that all done and not have to push any more of the town campus roof repairs onto future budgets. Next slide, please. Continuing with fleet maintenance in the general fund, the primary duties speak for themselves. We take care of the buildings, we take care of the fleet. I do want to put it in perspective, and that is on the fourth main bullet down. We take care of over 164,000 square feet of building and spread over 26 buildings. That's a pretty good amount of facility that we take care of. We also, with fleet, we maintain over 350 vehicles. So again, with one dedicated mechanic, And with ADC help, pretty miraculous that we're able to keep 350 vehicles rolling, not to mention all the small equipment that we, chainsaws, weed whackers, all sorts of stuff that we, again, we keep that all rolling. Upcoming goals and objectives sound again a little bit like a broken record. Get those roofs done. So we're going to get the 680 roof, 680 Calle Concordia, get that roof replacement done. You know, all the above are just a sampling of the larger projects. Through our evaluation, you know, nobody could have predicted COVID, and through our evaluation of the budget, we had a much longer list. But what we did with the town manager's help, with finance's help, we culled that list. We took out absolutely everything that was cosmetic. Everything that's on the list is necessary for those building upkeeps. And the reason is that you pay a little now, you pay a whole lot more later. And with that, you know, the differences between the fund, this year's fund and the proposed fund, we're looking at 11.1% increase in the O&M, and that's for necessary facility maintenance. Again, we called that list down to the bare bones. It's keeping in context with our 10-year facility plan. It's just we removed all the cosmetic stuff. Next slide, please. Stormwater Utility Fund. Name kind of speaks for itself. Want to talk about the highlights here. Two things in particular is that we get audited by ADEQ, and they're a subset of the EPA. We're beholden to all of them. We hold a permit. And one of the things that we've done with our inspectors developed a stormwater pollution prevention inspection and tracking program. And what that does is that helps us make sure that all the development out there, they're all following the rules and we're keeping track. It's all auditable, again, with ADEQ and making sure that we're keeping the town in good bookkeeping order with those that we have to answer to. The other thing that I was very proud of my staff is that we were able to get one of our CIP projects completely paid for by the state through the Arizona Emergency Mitigation Assistance Grant, which is the ADEMA. They went ahead and paid for that whole the whole project on Lambert Lane, which was a low flow crossing where Lambert Lane was in danger of having the downstream drainage, the outfall, eat back into the road. So kudos for getting that grant. Noteworthy fund budget differences between this year and the proposed. And this is fairly substantial. And you'll notice that there's a $2 million difference in O&M. And that has to do with two projects. One was the Catalina Shadows drainage mitigation. No, not Catalina Shadows, I'm sorry. Catalina Ridge. Too many Catalinas in Oro Valley. So Catalina Ridge drainage mitigation, and then the Highland Park mitigation. Well, we've been given some finality with the Catalina Ridge, and that project's gone. That's not going to get. We're not going to receive the grant from the feds. We have to retool on that one and work with Pima County. The Highland Mobile Home Park, Highlands Wash, which goes right down through the middle of that. That's not a dead project. However, because of COVID, it's on indefinite hold. So we have not included that in this year's budget. We expect to, when we finally get that opened up again, we'll reapply with the feds and still chase that one down. We were actually in a pretty good position before COVID hit. So fingers crossed that one can move forward. We have an 8.5% decrease in O&M, and that's really has to do with our consultant pretty much finishing up their portion of the work on a drainage criteria manual. We'll be working next over this proposed budget year to get that out and about amongst all the stakeholders, including council. Next slide, please. As I said, primary duties that you see the list there. The one I want to highlight really is the MS4 permit administration and reporting. That goes back to my earlier statement. We are beholden to others. Now, there are communities who have let these things lapsed, and they got slapped with some pretty hefty fines from both their states and their feds. We keep ours in good order, and our audits are always very, very good. We have a very good relationship with our auditors, and I want to maintain that. That's why I point this out as one of our primary duties. Our upcoming goals and objectives. ADEQ has a new general construction permit. This affects all aspects of construction that's out there. And what we will be doing over this next fiscal year is making sure that we implement all of the ADEQ 2020 rules. It hasn't been changed in a while. So there are some improvements to that permit process. And we'll need to make sure that both public and private development adhere to all the new things. And we're there to help walk them through to make sure that nobody gets caught without knowledge. The other thing I do want to point out is that we're going to be completing some hydraulic and some hydrologic studies for Mudder Earth Wash. For those of you a little longstanding on council, you'll remember in 2014, that was where we had an unprecedented storm event, and we actually had some residents flooded out. So we continue to work on that wash and to make sure that we bolster and we get that wash that it can handle the flood that was generated prior. It sets a new bar for us. Next slide. Transit. So I have a little typo on this, on the first and second bullets in the highlights and accomplishments. That's actually lift preventance maintenance. I guess maintenance was sticking to my thoughts here, and I just wanted to highlight that. So it's really all part of the first bullet. Then on the third bullet where it says prior to COVID-19, we had an average of 150 trips. That's not riders, I meant rides. So trips per month in 2019. The other thing I do want to point out in our accomplishments is that we have really, we really improved the amount of accidents per mile. So our safety measures that we've included, our safety training with our drivers is really taken into effect. With our primary duties, again, what I want to say, we partner with the Regional Transportation Authority. That is our primary funding source. And then our upcoming goals is really restore ourselves to pre-COVID ridership. Next slide, please. My last slide here is our roadway impact fee development fund, or impact fee fund. Our highlights is that we are continuing our CIP funding for LaCholla Boulevard, and then we wrapped up our locking on more roundabout. Noteworthy budget fund variance is that we'd actually highlighted that we were going to spend our impact fees this fiscal year. We're actually going to push those impact fee expenditures to next fiscal year and spend the RTA's money first. So we really want to draw down the RTA commitment first, and then we will spend our funds that we already have set aside in the bank later. With that, I'm very happy to answer any questions. This concludes my presentation, and I want to hand this back to the mayor.
Thank you, Paul. Appreciate it. So just as a reminder, we'll take questions from council. That'll be followed by a brief opening up to the others who are joining us this evening. Council? Council Member Nicholson?
A few questions. First of all, you couldn't hear us laugh. A few of us did laugh at your joke. Let's see. Any projected delays in the funding for Oracle Highway?
Yeah, so I did get a notification from ADOT. They had to change fiscal years because of COVID, but I don't want anybody to panic. Fiscal years just moves the project back by about 2 months. So they were going to start this fiscal year. They're going to start next fiscal year. So expect the actual construction to start in the fall. However, through the board, they've already done their right-of-way coordination. So they've for all the cross streets, on the 15th, their board approved an expansion of the ADOT right-of-way to be able to do the pavement tie-ins to all the cross streets. That will go back to the original dimensions when they're all done.
Another question. Why was the ADC is part of the weed spraying, correct?
Well, they actually do the physical removal of
Okay.
They don't do the spraying. We had two certified sprayers, but they both left our staff. And with the hiring freeze, we're not expanding staff. So what we're using is AAA as a contractor to do our weed spraying for us.
And how much of a change is that? I assume that's an increase in cost, or?
The difference between the employees, I don't have that right at my fingertips, but we can get that number. It was a slight increase, but it was very minimal, and we had the money in our budget to be able to take care of it.
Okay. And then the CARES money, I talked to Mary a little bit about it, but do we have any funds to be able to use? I know some of the things might be like automatic door openers. I don't know if there's any other
we've been diligent with our fleet and facilities group following what we've been spending to take care of COVID. I don't believe automatic door openers has been one of those items. And they hadn't been on our list with regard to where we already have automatic door openers. So we have some handicapped door openers. And then, of course, over at the community center, that actually has a sliding door, storefront door.
And because I know I'll be asked about it from citizens, are there any plans to spend any money at the Calle Concordia, the 680? If there is not, that's fine. It's just, I don't want to ask.
Well, we have our standard maintenance, so we will keep the hedgerows up. The money that we're really spending that we're projecting for 680, I believe, is just for the roof replacement.
Okay.
Yep.
Thank you.
Well, can you just a follow up to Oracle Road, because that's something of interest to our constituents?
Yes.
My understanding is that there were two phases. So just for clarification.
There are. Thank you, Mayor.
Yeah. Could you say what those phases are?
Yes. So phase one's actually been expanded. Phase one was originally River Road to Calle Concordia, which included lights up to Ina. Street lights up to Ina from River, sidewalk from River all the way up to Calle Concordia, up to McGee, and then pavement rehabilitation all the way up to Calle Concordia. ADOT expanded that to actually go farther south, so it's going all the way down to Miracle Mile and then Miracle Mile out to I-10. That's phase one. That's starting up here fall of 21, or up 20, which is FY21. Mm-hmm. Then in FY22 is Calle Concordia through to Tangerine.
Okay, very good. And I'd just like to striping. ADOT came in and did striping because there were complaints that it was difficult to see, especially at night.
Right.
I know it may have seemed odd that they were coming and striping in a road that's in poor condition, but nevertheless, I think folks really appreciated that. I suspect you had a role in helping to make that happen, so thank you.
Yes.
We had a policy, I believe it was a policy change, where we're now responsible for all sidewalk improvements. Is that correct?
We are. We are.
Any concerns about that policy? Been implemented?
Yeah. So far, I mean, we were apprehensive that there would be a flood. There wasn't a flood. And quite frankly, we're much more efficient about taking care of this, and we're better suited to make sure it's done to spec. The program's actually worked out quite well.
Thank you. We have a surprisingly number of bridges in Oro Valley.
Yes.
Are we responsible for all the bridges?
So what we do is we get inspection. We are responsible for the bridges, but we get inspections through ADOT. And then generally our rehabilitation has been taken care of up to now through the RTA. I've got my staff in my ear. I don't know if you see my ear, but Jose, you're muted, Jose. You're still muted, Jose. Just nod if yes. Yes, yes. Okay. Yeah. So we've had RTA help us with our bridges, and of course with RTA next, we'll be asking for that to continue.
And that's so at some point, I mean, they're all relatively new. And so replacement is not in my lifetime anyway. What is the game plan for replacement of these bridges when that time comes?
Well, again, we've been able to benefit from the RTA. We'll go to RTA next. If we don't have, if RTA next does not go through, then we'll have, we can petition PAG funding for it. The other thing we can do is we can start to work on a plan. Our bridge's lifespan is 50 years, I believe. Is that correct, Jose? Yeah.
You just verified, not in my lifetime, but yes. still concerned about them.
Yes.
You don't need to turn to this. I think it's page 43. The library boiler repair assessment. In my mind, the library is Pima County. I was curious why we were absorbing that expense.
Because the library is actually our facility. Now, we team up with Pima County, and we will continue to team up with Pima County. And we do, even though that we budget for it, we do get help from Pima County. And again, we will ask for their help. Amy? Oh, Pima, I was just in my ear. Pima County will be performing the repair.
Okay.
This is the assessment.
Yeah, this is the assessment. So we paid for the assessment. They're going to do the repair. So we have this cost-sharing arrangement. Sounds
we do. Okay. We do. Yeah, it's a very good relationship with them. They've stepped up.
Yeah, I suspect it is. So thank you. Hey, Paul, it was a great presentation. A lot of work obviously went into those PowerPoints, so thank you. Vice Mayor Barrett? You're on mute.
Yeah, thanks. Sorry, it takes me a second. I just wanted to thank you, Paul. Most of my questions were answered by the other council members. I wanted to congratulate you on securing ADOT's rehabilitation of Oracle Road. I know that was an important thing that we discussed at the council's strategic leadership plan, and it's important to our citizens. We hear about it regularly, and I was going to ask you for an update, but I saw you provided that, so thank you. Appreciate that. I do want to ask, you're talking about RTA next. What is the current situation regarding the future of RTA, and how will that impact public works moving forward, particularly in our five-year forecast?
Okay, so there's a lot of motion with that. So with our five-year forecast, we are finishing up our last RTA project with Wachoya. So there are also intersection, and there's other elements, there's many elements in the RTA. There's still ability for us to go back for things like intersections and safety enhancements where we see the need. But our major road construction projects will finish with Wachoya. We have other projects, and we're working with the Citizens Advisory Committee with the RTA. I'll be presenting that internally, and then I suspect they'll be presented externally of our list of projects that we would like to see in the RTA next. And I know with COVID, they're a little bit behind on how they're pulling that program together. If that doesn't go through, if RTA next does not go through, right now PAG funding is also supplementing the RTA. So if the RTA were to go away, there's still PAG funding available. So what we will do is we will go back to the old way we used to get our money, which was that we compete with everybody else, with all the other jurisdictions, for the finite amount of PAG funding there is out there. And we will use that again and apply that as we can to our road projects that we see coming up. And again, that's a list that we're working on presently right now.
Okay. And how about the Shannon Road project that's
sure.
pending?
Yeah,
what
no,
kind
I have,
of funding is available for that? I know that was a significant impact in the upcoming
right.
projections.
Right. So answer to your earlier question, I do know the answer to that one. So Shannon Road south of Naranja is not eligible for impact fees. And that's because presently right now, our IIP, the Infrastructure Improvement Plan, has Shannon Road north of Naranja to Tangerine. However, we are currently under design on Shannon Road. And we've already factored this in. Will there be an RTA next? Will there not be an RTA next? And so we're looking at two projects. So we have a consultant looking at this. So project number one is if there is no RTA next, we're looking at pavement rehabilitation, some shoulder work, and some drainage improvements. And that'll be it. And that'll be something the town would be able to fund. If there is an RTA next, what I would like to do, and this is something I'd like to do throughout and be part of the projects that I'll be proposing to the RTA next, is where we have two-lane arterials, rural arterials, I would like to change those to be three-lane, to have a center turn lane in them. Because again, we've seen the increase of traffic and the urbanization spread from Tucson spreading outwards to the suburbs, and to be able to increase the width of our roads. So that I would make that request for RTA next. That I don't think we would have the money for. So again, we're looking at two phases. I'm not putting it into this project because first I need to have the engineer finish the present, finish his work. Then we'll evaluate and we'll come up with two game plans.
Okay, thanks. That's a good answer. And then regarding the hiring freeze and the weed spraying that you mentioned, what is the plan for next fiscal year's budget? Are we going to end up spending more money on a contractor versus if we just went ahead and hired the full-time employee?
Well, it's more than hiring. You also have to get, Vice Mayor, you also have to get them certified.
Oh.
So there's a whole process involved. I think it's much more efficient just to have AAA use their certification and have them do it. And it's a marginal cost difference, but very marginal.
Okay, thank you. And thanks again. Everyone enjoys the quality of Oro Valley's roads, so thank you to the Public Works Department for that.
Thank you.
Okay, I don't see any other council members with questions, so I'll open it to the public. If there are any questions for Mr. Kiesler, this is your opportunity. Okay, so seeing none, thank you. Ms. Ball, we appreciate your presentation tonight.
And thank all you.
Staff.
Thank you.
Yeah. Chief Riley.
Okay, I think we have it all ready here. So thank you, Mr. Mayor, council members, for allowing me to present the Oro Valley Police Department's budget. It is my honor to represent the men and women of the Oro Valley Police Department, and I can speak for the entire agency that we are proud to continue to serve this great community and provide the excellent police services that they deserve and are accustomed to. As you can imagine, that this budget process is a unique one due to the pandemic, and we have been fiscally responsible not only while creating this upcoming budget process, but also remainder of this current fiscal budget year. I commit to you that as OVPD transitions into a new leadership, we will continue to strive towards to becoming the most respected and highly motivated police agency in Arizona. So I'll begin with our PowerPoint, and we'll go to the next slide. So we'll start off with our major accomplishments for this past fiscal year. The police department was able to conduct a full department training, including our telecommunicators, with the interdiction for the protection of children. It assists in identifying children who may be missing or exploited or at risk of being exploited. After this training was conducted, within 1 week of this training, we had a police officer respond to a call and were able to save the lives of two young women who were being exploited. So the training paid off immensely right at the very beginning. As you know from the police chief process that I was recently in and chosen for, and so grateful for that, my passion is officer wellness and suicide prevention to address national trends. So we began that process while I was your commander, and some of the programs that were implemented was Bulletproof, an app that we have put in place for our police officers that allows them to have some confidential resources that they may need if they're having issues. You can imagine that some of the tragedies that they see daily. So this is one of our accomplishments, and we will continue to push for health and wellness programs for our police officers and all of our members of our staff. We received a grant from the Governor's Office of Highway Safety for $107,000. Worth of overtime and equipment to support DUI enforcement and hazardous moving violation enforcement and participation with the Southern Arizona DUI Task Force. Another accomplishment was we were awarded $226,000 from funding in the Operation Stone Garden for equipment, overtime, and mileage to combat illegal contraband, and in particular, the smuggling of humans apprehension. We had the grand opening of the McGee substation in July of last year. We're so grateful for the town's support with this project. It has alleviated much needed space needs and our requirements for evidence retention with the guidelines of state law. And finally, we also successfully implemented our continuity of operations plans for emergencies. And I'll speak a little bit more detail here shortly on our COVID response for that, where we were able to implement the COOP for all of the departments throughout the town. Next slide, please. As we began to put together our budget, we kept in mind the town council's strategic plan for public safety in regards to support strategies that result in a safer community with low crimes, safe neighborhoods, and positive relationships between law enforcement and the community members. The photograph that you'll see to my right is a program that we have at our STEM school that is run by Officer Vivian Lopez, who created this, which is a junior police officer program, and this is their graduation of that event. And it's a very popular event, a very popular program at the school, and is so popular that she actually has to cut it into 6-week implements so that we can get more children in the program. And it really focuses on anti-bullying and different type of safety measures for children. To the left, the photograph, you'll see a citizen, an anonymous citizen, left this rock outside of a police officer's home, thanking them for their service. So some of the other things that will continue under this strategy given to us by the town council will be the continued deployment of our high visibility enforcement to combat the high collision intersections in our community. We also will be looking at crime trends and areas that we can deploy resources where we're seeing an uptick in crime. And we are implementing a new program called Return Me Home, which will allow citizens of our community who have members of their family that are at risk with potential dementia, that we can have them provide us a photograph and information ahead of time, so that if they do go missing, we will have that information on hand prior to an incident. It's a preventative measure that's extremely popular program up in the Phoenix area. And we look forward to implementing that program here in our community. We'll continue to have our women's self-defense program, which we will not be starting up here in the near future because of COVID, but we do look forward to returning that program. It's very popular, along with the program of Ladies Start Your Engines is another maintenance program that we teach women on how to do minor maintenance issues in case they break down on the side of the road and they're by themselves. Next slide. As you all knew, council members, that during the police chief process, I did take advantage of the town's logo of It's in Our Nature and talk about policing, It's in Our Nature. It continues to be our department's approach as we present to you our budget process this year. Our priority continues to be community policing and engagement. And it was critical to have this well-established relationship with our community ahead of time, especially during this past pandemic. And I'll continue to speak with that a little bit more detail about that shortly. We will continue to address calls for service with our values of the police department, which are integrity, excellence, and fairness. The mitigation of the effects of increased traffic with emphasis on safety, which refers primarily to our Hive deployment, and also our priority of our distracted driving ordinance enforcement. Our goal is to provide essential and efficient police services to this community. Some of our additional programs that we will continue to also have in our community with our volunteer program is our Dark House program. I received many emails back today from our volunteers very anxious to return. And so we are in the process of figuring a time element on when that will be safe for them. We are also going to continue our active shooter response training, and we provide that to local businesses and hospitals throughout Pima County. I think it's important for you to know, as your new police chief, that is my goal to also review each section and every department of this agency to make sure that we are continuing to provide the essential and efficient police services. We will capitalize as well on some internal training, both inside of our agency, but also our regional partners. We've already established that with Marana and Sarita, and we have completed one training in April via a Zoom process, and we will continue to have some additional regional collaborations with them. Next slide. The fiscal year comparison, you will see with the personnel, there is a slight uptick, and that is referring to the ASRS and PSPRS pensions. Our O&M has been reduced by approximately $208,000, and our capital cost approximately by $111,000. We'll go to the next slide. I was asked to address the pandemic response as well in our presentation of the budget, just to ensure that we presented all of the different items that we were challenged with over this last 12 weeks. I think it's important for you to know that your emergency manager, Shar Ackerman, back in October of 2019, collaborated with all of the departments throughout the town and created their continuity of operations plan, which I think that Paul referred to as well in his slide presentation. Throughout our pandemic response, and I've mentioned before, we kept in mind and applied the National Incident Management System, which is industry standards for law enforcement during emergencies. I know that I've said this before, but we train for 3 to 4 day emergencies, certainly not at this length. And it is important to know that we are certainly not out of this pandemic either. So we have to keep that in mind as we put together our budget and being our fiscally responsible through the fiscal budget year of 2021. We are collaborating with departments and regional partners for supplies and resources continuously. And I think that we also did that throughout the actual town itself, where we were able to work with the other departments to ensure that they had all the supplies that they needed. And at times they assisted us with supply needs as well for the police department to ensure our first responders had all the supplies and equipment they needed. We continued even today having daily participation with the Pima County Emergency Operations Center and established weekly briefings with town council and executive leadership team. I think this was critical to ensure a unified message of one town seal during this pandemic. And we were able to establish that from the very beginning. We also worked tirelessly, as you know, Mr. Mayor, you and I did on many occasions, communicate with the public on videos and social media outreach to ensure that we communicated our message of the different governor's executive orders. And we were able to ensure calm and confidence during this pandemic for our community. I believe that the communication and relationship that we had with the town prior to this pandemic was essential, and that came from all of the community engagement that not only the police department does, but also the town does as a whole. One of the things that our emergency manager also requested, and Dave Gephardt referred to it from today's meeting that he had with the governor's office, is we began documenting on the federal forms under the NIMS guidelines, all of the outgoing costs for personnel to include the police officers and telecommunicators overtime from the very beginning. I think now that we have gathered all of this information, not only from the police department's cost, but the entire town's, this will make a seamless effort for Dave to be able to provide those numbers quickly and potentially get us our reimbursement sooner. I did miss a part in reference to the communication out to the public. I would be remiss if I did not mention the fact that we partnered with the Golden Ranch Fire District and our brothers in the first responders to ensure also any concerns or safety concerns that we needed to get out in collaboration with the Golden Ranch Fire District. We'll go to the next slide. The future goals, as I like to call the vision of the police department, is we want to continue to meet the community's expectation, provide the exceptional police service will always be our priority. We're continuing to look at crime analysis and focus on crime trends in our community. We also want to provide the best equipment for our police officers and our staff that are in their, for example, our police vehicles. The officers are in their vehicle for 40 hours plus a week, and it's their mobile office. So it's one of those priorities for us to continue to look for our future goals in collaboration with the town. We want to continue to do our community outreach with the different programs. And frankly, because of the pandemic, some of our community outreach will probably look different, but it is a priority of this department. And finally, we want to continue with our regional collaboration of training. I think it is an effective measure that we will be able to implement different trainings and guidance for our police officers and telecommunicators and our members of this department. Our other training project that we're working on is a driver's training, is one of our priorities for our police officers. As I said, that they are in their police vehicles quite a bit, and our ways of preventative in car crashes in their vehicles is to get them into training. So that is one of our goals for the agency. And finally, Mr. Mayor and Council, I would be remiss in not mentioning the fact that over the last 12 weeks and actually 15 weeks or so that I've been your police chief, I've had the fortunate opportunity to have the best command staff who's helped guide me and provided a very roadmap of leadership to this community, not only to this department, but to this town and to this entire community. And I want to thank them personally for all of their long hours as we continue through this pandemic. It is not, we are seeing somewhat of a lift, but I believe it to be continuing here in the next few weeks still. And so as Councilmember Joyce Jones-Ivey mentioned, there is a possibility that it could uptick again. So we're prepared to respond and perform our best police services to this community. And with that, I'm willing to take any questions that you might have.
Thank you. Councilmember Pena.
Yes, thank you. And I apologize. My video is not working, but I am here. So Chief Riley, can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay, thank you. So Chief Riley, I want to compliment you on your leadership coming into your position as chief. It's been really challenging, I'm sure, for you. And you have not shown probably the level of just anxiety that this pandemic has brought. And you've shown your leadership to be just stellar. So I compliment you on that, along with your staff. The OVPD team has really done a great job for our community. So thank you for that. And then coming into a new budget, it certainly isn't easy, especially managing one of the largest departments for the town. So thank you for that. One of the things I wanted to ask you is on page 53, where it outlines the personnel, the O&M, and the capital. The personnel is, there's very little change, which is good. And I want to go once from that page where we have the 16.379 to page 55, where it talks about your future goals of crime analysis and focus on trends. And so I guess my question is, you know, we hear about the things that have happened in Oro Valley and upticks on different types of crime, you know, whether it be some, you know, car accidents, we've had opioid issues, et cetera. So I just want to make sure that while focusing on trends, it is the personnel that we have, is that going to be adequate for what you're trying to accomplish with that?
Sure. Thank you, Councilmember Pena, for your question. It is my opinion that I would like to have the opportunity to review each division and each unit of this agency. And as you can imagine, during this pandemic, that opportunity has not had, I haven't had a lot of opportunity to do that yet. So in my opinion, currently we are staffed appropriately for me to, for us as a department to continue to be the one of the safest communities in our state. And it's our priority to really take a deeper dive into each unit and to ensure that we are conducting effective and efficient police services to this community. So the answer right now is that our personnel, we are currently down several officers, I believe as of today, 8. And it is our goal to focus on recruitment right now so that I can get those positions filled to be able to provide, you know, to continue to reallocate resources where needed. So right now our focus is gonna be on recruitment and retention.
Okay, thank you. And then with regards to training, I'm glad that you're putting emphasis on that because looking at, or I guess focusing on trends as things change, that training is gonna be extremely important. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, I would say that's a very fair statement. As you can imagine, law enforcement is a very high liability position for any community in town, municipality to take on. And it's important to have that training to be able to provide the guidance and latest trends so that we can perform the best service safely without causing any liability and concerns to this community.
Okay, and then can you just quickly address the importance of the capital that is being addressed in your presentation?
So our capital that we are addressing with that is gonna be some of our grant capacity is what we have in our field services. Is that what you're referring to? Or are you talking about vehicles?
It was for, there was some purchase for the dispatchers.
Oh, I'm sorry, yes. So we are currently on request for capital, which will probably be on tomorrow night's discussion. We have a $220,000 project involving our telecommunications facility, what we call our consoles. The consoles are what holds the equipment of the dispatchers in place. Our current equipment is has a 15-year lifespan, and we are at 17. And so we are hopefully going to have that approved so we can replace it in our hopes to not have it break down in between. It's imperative to also know that our because of the things of monitor size changes and things like that, we have to upgrade the facility in order to keep up with technology. And we are also wanting to expand out one of the console positions for the importance of growth, which we will be prepared for in the future, as well as the fact that we are a secondary backup for the Marana Municipality for the Emergency Communication Center. They're what we call their public safety answering point, or PSAP. And so as you may know, back in January, Marana telecommunicators came to our facility while they were under construction for 2 months. And with the benefit of our PC WIN program, which is the Pima County Wireless Integrated Networking System, they're able to literally log in here on our computers and be able to take 911 calls for service that are occurring in Marana. We've also done the same during our construction of our communications center, where we replaced the flooring a little over a year ago, where we did they also let us visit over there for a little over a couple weeks, I believe, when our floor was getting replaced here. So it's important if something were to happen here at our telecommunications center or our PSAP that we can go over to Marana and vice versa. And so it's very important that we upgrade this equipment in order to accomplish that growth.
Okay, and the risk of not doing it, because it sounds like it does have a sense of urgency, the risk of not getting that done as soon as possible is what?
The risk is we aren't able to house the appropriate equipment in place. It could break down. There is some concern with the fact that if we have an incident here, or Marana has an incident, then they don't have a facility to go to either. It's in my opinion, it's a high priority on the capital list for the agency.
Okay, so that's a safety issue for our community. So thank you for addressing that. I appreciate it. And that's the last of my questions. So thank you. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Council Member Jones Ivy. Council Member Jones Ivy.
Thank you very much. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
Hi. Hi. Chief Riley, I want to thank you for your exemplary leadership and just the outstanding job that our officers have done during this pandemic. My questions were pretty much as were the questions that Councilman Pena asked when I took a look at the O&M and saw that there was a significant decrease for 2021 as well as the capital. So I thank you for your explanation on that. My concern is that things are going to be different after COVID, and I'm really concerned about what changes are going to be made to help protect our police officers.
Okay, well, thank you, Councilmember Joyce Jones Ivy. Our goal from the very beginning has always to provide the best equipment for our police officers. I think I mentioned in one of my briefings to you that in 2017, Lieutenant John Teachout, along with your emergency manager, Shar Ackerman, were able to put together collaboratively a personal protection gear for your police officers as they responded to service calls. So we were fortunate with this agency to already have a lot of the PPE equipments and the N95s that most agencies were perhaps lacking. So we have a little bit of that ahead of, you know, equipment ahead of time in that advantage of many other agencies. What we have done is worked tirelessly with Shar Ackerman, the emergency manager, along with our property and evidence personnel to do somewhat of a predictability and what we call a burn rate of where our equipment might be going along for the future. So if it continues, we need know that we need to have, you know, X amount of N95s and we need to have this amount of mini gloves and so forth. And then what now is occurring is we work with the town as well to ensure that the supplies are also there for the town staff. So there is that collaborative relationship that we're establishing to ensure that the officers have all of their equipment ahead of time and that we have it prepared. And finally, one of the internal trainings that we're also going to be doing is actually reviewing the donning and doffing of the equipment. I think it's important for them to know that when they're in a critical call, that what that looks like. And we will also be implementing it along the way through all of our training.
Okay. What about testing? Are we still going to continue to do that? And how and how long?
Sure. We're in the process of trying to obtain the testing for the antibody testing for our staff. Mm-hmm. That is still going to be a few weeks out in reference to getting the equipment in so that we can do that. And we're working with the Human Resource Department to complete that for the first responders. And then we've also ordered some extra kits just for future needs that we might need. And then also with Shar Ackerman's expertise, we're working if there's any additional tests that might come up. As you can imagine, this is ever evolving. Mm-hmm. And so we want to be prepared for any new things that might come along that might benefit the agency ahead of time. I want you to know that we've worked, actually Commander Olson has somewhat become a physician in this topic and is able to really been able to get together with human resources and collaborate on what's going to be the best product for our police officers. And then we've presented that to the town manager.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Welcome.
Council Member Rodman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have a few questions. You mentioned on page 50, you talked about the Stone Garden monies that we got this year, some $200,000+. Do we get that directly or does that come through Pima County?
That actually comes via the state and then it gets dispersed from there down to the municipalities.
So the problems that Pima County has had with Stone Garden is not affecting us, our ability, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. The O&M numbers that, yes, it's good that they've gone down over $200,000. How did you do that? What did we stop doing? Or how? I mean, it's 20% almost reduction in 1 year. So what? How did we get there? What did we do?
So I was able to cut some of the field supply needs that we were able to reduce that. One of the big ticket items I would say too was that we had estimated utilities at our new McGee station to be higher than was needed. So after this year of being able to kind of calculate that, we were able to reduce that line item as well. Some of the uniforms for special assignments, we were able to delay for a year. They have uniforms we do purchase extra, different than what we give them on their uniform allowance. And the nice to have some of the giveaways that we normally have for our community resource unit that we give out to the public, we also cut. We did cut some of our travel and training, and the reason for that is that we are focusing a lot more on a regional collaboration, hoping to do a lot more internal training. And then one of the capital items that we did cut that we always have for capacity, council member, involves $12,000 in case we are in need of a new canine. We have two very young patrol dogs right now. And I have received a commitment from the town manager that if we ended up getting into a situation that we happen to need a new patrol canine in this next year, that she would provide that for us. So we did remove those large ticket items.
So we feel that we are not, this did not affect in a major way our ability to provide the services that we need to provide.
No, I think we will be able to continue to provide the service that this community expects. And that we will be able to perform that.
So last year, this current year's budget, we added four additional headcount, FTEs, for half the squad. This is kind of a two-part question. We were indicating that we would then, I know the request was a full squad, but over 2 years at least. Now, I don't know that other half of the squad FTEs is in this budget. Am I correct? It's not?
It is not.
Okay. And that's because of COVID?
Actually, that was back in March when I first became your police chief. We realized that we were having more of an issue with retaining police officers and our staff. We were down back when I first started 9. I believe we are currently, as of today, we had another retirement come in, so we'll be down 8 police officers. And our focus was to really, this upcoming year, I asked that we hold off on any additional positions and that I can try and focus on two things, council member. One being that we could take a deeper dive into each unit to make sure that we're being as efficient and effective as possible. And the second being is that we will be able to try and retain and hire more police officers to fill the already empty spots that I have. And I know that I have the support that if I need more police officers or other staff, that I will assure you, I will let you know. And we will do that.
So the 8 that you're trying to fill, does that include the 4 that were added for this current year? Or is that even before we get there?
I'm not adding any new positions this year. It is the 4.
The current year now.
I'm sorry. I apologize. Yes, we're still trying to fill those positions.
Okay. So the 8 is including the 4 that we added for this year?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Because, again, I know when we talked some time back, there was a real difficulty in recruiting and maybe even to some degree retention, but certainly more in recruiting due to the difficult world that the police officers work in today, and et cetera. And I was concerned at that time about the no merit increases,
mm-hmm.
the compensation part, and were we going to need to look at that to be sure that we can have the sufficient staff. I was told that you now have, that isn't as difficult now to recruit, that you're getting more recruits. Is that accurate or not?
Well, we had more at the testing process when we initially began the process several months back. And we actually had to change things up a little time this time, because normally we do the physical fitness exam first And then we are able to then do the written and so forth. But because of COVID, we had to switch it. And I believe we had approximately 40 candidates show up. And then it dwindles down as we get passing of the written test. And then this past couple weekends ago, we did the physical exam, and we lost several people during that process as well. So right now, I'm hoping that we can fill 5 positions at the next police academy, which is in July. But we are currently in background investigations and polygraphs, and we should anticipate losing some of the candidates possibly through that process. It's a very, very difficult process to get through. And we have high standards, obviously, here through the police department, but also through Arizona Post standards that we must maintain. And so if we can get through this, then we would like to fill the 5 positions for the police academy. In addition, we are currently hosting a lateral opening process. And so I will be, we're hoping to have that oral boards next week for several applicants that have applied. But I don't know that we've seen an increase right now. We saw it at the very beginning of this last process, and then it dwindled down, and I'm at the bare minimum again.
And be very frank, do you have the salary levels that you need to recruit for the people you need to recruit?
It would be, I would have to say we would have to see the police analysis, but the information that I have initially is that we are somewhat on the lower end. So my recommendation would be that we do look at that cost analysis in the future, and that would be where we possibly could recruit more.
Well, you'll have my support for that. I think that we simply cannot afford to get behind the curve in being able to recruit the level of officers that we, and retain the level of officers that we need. And you said earlier that our town has gotten used to. It isn't just that, it's safety. And so I was concerned when I heard that it was difficult to recruit. And I want to make sure we don't go nickel, whatever that is, penny wise and pound foolish. I guess I got that. The last thing is just to thank you for the once or twice a week briefings that you've done with and to Mary Jacobs as well, for 3 of us at a time, so there's no open meeting act problem. But that's been very, very helpful. And we've given us an opportunity as council members to also make suggestions, but certainly let us know where we are. And you've always been right on top of it. And made us feel as though we know that our police department is doing everything that it possibly can and more, even under these circumstances. So thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
Okay.
There you are.
There I am. Okay. Most of my questions have already been answered. That's one of the benefits of having my fellow council members go before me. And any other questions that I have, I think I'll get the answers to when I receive that munis as part of the budget. So I also just want to echo my thanks. You've done a tremendous job. You've hit the ground running. I've just been in awe of all that you've done and accomplished through this emergency pandemic and the work of all of your department and officers. And I think that our whole community is incredibly supportive and thankful. And, you know, I don't know what the future holds, and I feel confident that you'll be there for us. And, you know, we want to do what it takes to make sure that we keep our police and our public safety as kind of those foundational services. That's where we really want to prioritize. So thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Vice Mayor.
Councilmember Nicholson.
Okay, I'm late. I want to thank you to Chief Riley. I think you've done an excellent job. You haven't been on as a chief for a very long time. You've done, not everyone knows that you've done a phone call with us basically once a week or twice a week even. Sometimes for the COVID stuff, so I appreciate that. And I want to say thanks to all the officers out there too. I know the whole town staff has been dealing with the COVID situation, but I know some criminals can purposely cough on officers, and that's an added stress, especially for some of the older officers and stuff. So I want to be appreciative to everyone for that. A few things I think you touched base. I saw the motorcycle officers went from 5 to 3, so that's a 40% drop, but I assume it's just hard to get people to to ride the motorcycle late at night, but during the day where it's so hot out, is that the main problem, or are we trying to limit that, or is it just issues with buying an American-made motorcycle?
Well, thank you for your question, Councilmember Nicholson. We are actually finding it's actually becoming somewhat of a national trend where police officers are preferring to not be on the motorcycle. So we are actively recruiting for any of our officers. So what we've done instead is those officers that are interested in traffic enforcement and traffic safety, we've deployed them in what we call, a four-wheel vehicle instead. And so we've somewhat maneuvered that around a little bit. So all those numbers on the side that you see in your budget document is reallocation of staff.
Okay. And the reallocation of staff, the SROs, I know you moved them over to the street, but are you going to move them to the schools, or are the schools looking to open up? Have you had communications with them back and forth? Or I don't know if they're going to keep the schools open in fall or summertime or anything, but.
Yeah, Councilmember Nicholson, that's a great question. I've been working and been meetings with Todd Yeager at Amphitheater School District. They've created a program called the Blue Ribbon Task Force, I believe is what it's referred to. And that's really where they'll be implementing the reintegration of school and what that's gonna look like. We don't know yet. We believe it's gonna be different. Obviously, in particular for our high school levels, because those kids are able to remain home if necessary. So that's going to be a little bit different versus our the elementary school and junior highs. So we're working with them hand in hand, and I'm in constant discussion as well with our principals and making sure that we're having that open dialogue ahead of time. But our goal is to integrate these school resource officers right back into the school assignments effective the first part of August. Because that way, I think we'll have a better plan on what's going on by then.
Okay. This is a small thing, but I know you're developing a program for financial fraud for our elderly. And I know, economic downturns, your Dow Jones goes down, people worry about their finances, and they start looking at alternative finances. Are we seeing an uptick on that, or are we just still doing training on that? Or can you speak a little bit about that?
In regards to the times during the pandemic, we're actually still gathering some of our statistics for the crime analysis that's gone on. I think that senior scams and frauds in our community are always a concern of ours, and we are always focusing on that. We have put back our community resource unit so that they will continue to educate the vulnerable community members of our community, in particular our seniors. So we are still focusing on that and training them.
Okay. And then also, too, I agree with Bill that I know you talked about liability a little bit earlier on. Mm-hmm. I think when you're able to hire the higher quality people, I think we do in Oro Valley, but to maintain that, to keeping a little bit higher pay or at least competitive, you don't want to be on the low end. But I agree with Bill 100% that, if you spend a little bit more money in the beginning, you get a little bit better candidate pool, and then hopefully those candidates either go through training faster, or maybe they, upgrade faster, and then you less likely to get a bad apple that ends up costing the town a bunch of money. So
exactly.
I'm in agreement with that too. And
yeah. I am too.
That's it. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Councilmember Solomon.
Hi, thank you. Actually, my first question or two is maybe more for David Gebhardt as opposed to the chief, and it's regarding the pension fund. I'm assuming now's the time to ask about that, or would we be covering it tomorrow?
Okay.
All right, I'll ask him now. So during the council strategic retreat, this topic came up and you had discussed it. I know we're running late, so I'll ask at a higher level. So the first question is, why do we have this unfunded liability in the pension plan? And is that typical or atypical?
Is that question directed to Mr. Gebhardt?
Yes.
Sorry, thank you, Council Member Solomon, members of the council, Mayor. Yeah, this is really typical of the PSPRS plan and system. You know, I think if you look back historically, there's a couple things that have gone on, several things to look at. You know, whenever you have these huge unfunded liabilities, it's typically never just one item that you're looking at. It's usually several items that kind of combine to create this monster or this animal. But one of those items is, I think that historically, if you look at the plan itself, that benefits have been too generous. And really in that in relationship to the contributions, obviously, there's a factor there that the contributions should be able to support the benefits that are paid out or that are promised to future retirees. And that just hasn't been the case. I think, you know, the actuaries, to be truthful, have been to blame partially on this. They have not done a good job, so far as I'm aware, of factoring in permanent benefit increases into the plan that have been promised to retirees, and that's created some of the problems. Certainly some of the issues additional to that include our investment returns in the plan, and that's, you know, if we want to place blame there, I would say the investment advisors and investment firms that the plan has hired have not done an effective job. They've invested in some overly risky investments, and we sustained some losses there. And then certainly, you know, just the plan structure, the design of the plan itself, where, you know, if you compare it to ASRS, you've got a 50-50 split between the employer and the employee contribution. In PSPRS, the employee contribution is limited to 7.65%, and that, you know, brought us into where the state legislature tried to increase that over time to 11.65%, and there was a lawsuit, and then they ended up having to undo those changes. So, you know, again, kind of a mix of different issues of why we have this unfunded liability, but just generally speaking, you see this unfunded liability across the state, and because each plan is really specific, it varies, even though most, if not all, cities, towns, local governments that have public safety, even though most of those have some sort of unfunded liability, you see really some wide variability between specific plans and specific local governments in terms of what that unfunded liability is. So, and you know, other factors of why that is include how those, because we have local pension boards, how those pension boards even administer their plans. In terms of, you know, allowing people onto the plan and processing drops and different, you know, whether they people go on, they have medical events or whatever and have to retire early. So there's all kinds of different issues involved there. It's not a straightforward issue, but those are some of the highlights as to why we would have an unfunded liability. And that is, you know, I think that's pretty standard across the state.
Now, I know what we've done, for example, the most recent year is our current liability contribution was about $1 million, and we've been paying an additional $2 million for a total of $3 million. And that $2 million was to start to pay down that unfunded liability. And at the current rate of about $24 million, we'd have that at $2 million paid off in about 12 years. And if there's some increases, it may go on. And that's actually under the length of time that the state guidelines have for paying that off. So I know we are addressing it now, and I know at the strategic plan retreat, the question came up is, well, we should accelerate our payments and pay off that unfunded liability, that would be financially beneficial to the town. Now, you had your response to that, from what I recall, was that that was not something you would recommend doing and that we shouldn't do. And could you touch on that again?
Yeah, Council Member Solomon, members of the council, I think, as I recall back, there was a question as to whether pension obligation bonds should be issued to absolve the liability. And I'm certainly not in favor of that position. I think that that is not a recommendation of GFOA as a best practice. I think that exposes the town to undue liability and challenges. I think, you know, just in terms of the plan itself, again, going back historically, I think one of the challenges that I have is just trusting the plan because I've seen the failures. I think we've, obviously up till COVID, we saw this huge run up in the market, and yet we still see so you would expect that we would have investment returns that would start to, compound and really pay down that unfunded liability. And I don't think that, I haven't seen that to be the case. And I would question why that isn't the case. So I think there's just a fundamental, and I don't think I'm just speaking for myself here. I think statewide, there's a fundamental distrust of the PSPRS plan and the mismanagement associated with it. And until that issue becomes resolved, I would hesitate to funnel additional revenues toward the plan. I mean, I think, something reasonable, $500,000 here, I'm okay with that. But as we've all seen this year, even in the last couple of months, market conditions can change really, really rapidly. We saw this with the Great Recession. We've seen it with COVID. And those drops in the market really have an impact. And if you've pre-funded, really you've lost a good percentage or a portion of that pre-funding, truthfully, because you pre-funded 500,000, the market dropped by 20%. Well, you've lost 20% of your money to something that really is outside of your control. So, I think we just got to be cautious here. These plans, these unfunded liabilities were not created overnight. They were created over time, and they get dealt with and get absolved over time. And it's part of what our actuary, the PSPRS actuary, is part of their job and responsibility is to build in reasonable rates that deal with those liabilities so that over time we can deal with them and we don't hamstring cities and towns in providing services to our residents, trying to deal with something in one fell swoop that really ought to be dealt with over the perspective of time. So
thank you. Mayor? And then I've got a question for the chief.
Just a moment, Councilmember Solomon. Ms. Jacobs.
Mr. Mayor and Councilmember Solomon, I did just want to let the council know that we will be bringing to you on June 17th the recommended PSPRS policy that will be required to adopt per state law. And we do plan on having a more detailed presentation about PSPRS and the retirement at that point. Not that we're saying we can't answer questions, but I did just want to let you know that we will have that information forthcoming.
No, thank you. After 9 o'clock at night, I don't think we want a detailed explanation.
Fair enough.
So Chief, a question, because we're concerned about recruitment, we're concerned about retention, and we know the salary and other factors. Does this unfunded liability, has this had any impact? Do incoming offices, are they concerned about this? Are current offices concerned about this? Or is this a non-issue to them? What are they concerned about?
In reference to recruitment, Councilmember Solomon, the new officers, I don't think really have a clear understanding of the unfunded liability in reference to recruitment and coming on board with this agency. Currently, the officers that are here, it is a topic that they're very familiar with, and I don't believe that it's a large factor in their decision. I think the biggest issue in reference to recruitment and retention is going to be the pay and benefit packages that we have potential for offering.
Okay, thank you very much. That's all I had.
Okay, thank you. Chief, I just want to add my appreciation for the response during this COVID-19 period. I appreciate especially your reaching out to the hospital. I know early on the occupancy rate at the hospital was a concern, the availability of personal protection equipment, and I appreciate your keeping in contact with Aaron. also the presence of the officers at our grocery stores in the community early on to help mm-hmm. maintain calm, and just their presence was much appreciated. Also the approach, kind of the soft approach in terms of education, and I think that was clearly the way to go. And the preparation that our police department in terms of personal protection equipment for our officers was certainly exemplary, as I would hear from other communities across the region where their public, that was a real problem, that they didn't have the personal protection equipment. So it really speaks well to our department, and I appreciate all that you and the other officers have done and will continue to do. As you said, we're not COVID, coronavirus is not going anywhere. I think all the council, the concerns about the hiring, and you certainly have our support, and so we appreciate all that you do, Chief. We're fortunate to have you.
And thank you very much.
So I think with that, we're it's 9:10, as I mentioned at the outset. I was hoping to end the study session as close to 9 as possible. We want to thank all those who've participated tonight. We will continue this meeting to Thursday, May 28th at 6 p.m. So we invite you to return. Tomorrow evening, we'll be covering community and economic development, parks and recreation, water, administrative functions, and capital. With that, we again appreciate all those who've presented tonight. Ms. Jacobs, I want to thank you for the response to COVID-19. I mean, early on, you and the executive team responded by with a hiring freeze, with travel freeze, looking at current budgets to make reductions where possible, that I think led to $800,000 or $900,000 in savings that is going to help us bring us close to a balanced budget, if not a balanced budget, by the end of the fiscal year. So thank you very much. And I know that COVID-19, like the chief and other, it's added, if you already didn't have enough to do, this added to your workload, but you've really shouldered it in exemplary fashion. So thank you so much.
So thank you, Mr. Mayor, and thank you to members of council and my entire team. They've done a tremendous job.
Thank you, everybody. So again, we'll adjourn for tonight and continue tomorrow at 6 p.m. Thank you.